Lee in Washington, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex Jones. I've been waiting a long time to talk to you. Anyways, I just wanted to say, I remember back in the day, Y2K, the Bill Cooper incident, and you smoking me, Joe Rogan. Now you lost your kids, and I'm so happy about that, dude. If I ever seen you in real life, I would smack the shit out of you.
We'll delay that because we can't have cussing. I've never taken DMT.
That thing sucks.
Who is your daddy, and what does he do? End of day. The freedom of speech is being taken away.
What do you think happens to someone after they die? Do you believe in heaven?
I never did.
And welcome to a brand new life, to a brand new day, all the way from the wastelands of California. My name is Michael, and I look forward to once again serve you those sounds of salvation. First time listeners, turn on, tune in, and drop out. This is a different kind of show, a place where you don't feel so alone. Let us chase away the light no matter what you at home choose to believe. I do admire you for your curiosity. Live and direct right now on the TuneIn Radio app. Search End of Days and you'll find the 24/7 network, or go to michaeldeacon.com. Any episode you might have missed, go there now. First guest tonight is Mr. Mike Barra. He is a New York Times best-selling author, screenwriter, and lecturer. A self-described born-again conspiracy theorist. Mike's first book, Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA, was a New York Times bestseller. Mike has made numerous public appearances lecturing on the subjects of space science, NASA, physics, and the link between science and spirit. He is a regular contributor to television and radio shows alike. And of course, after the break, Mike Hideous joins me here live. He is the founder and frontman of the East Coast gothic rock band, The Empire Hideous, which was active through the 1990s and into the early 2000s. He also performed with the Bronx Casket Company, Spy Society 99, and The Misfits as a fill-in vocalist for their South American and European tours. Once again, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for allowing me into your hearts and into your minds. Here we are again on a night like this. Welcome back, boys and girls. Always an honor and pleasure to be here. Thank you to those listening here in America and those who listen outside of America. Feels great to be back already. Great to see so many of you out there. We survived yet another week. We've got a full house here tonight. Mike Barra joining me here in a moment. Mr. Mike Hideous also dropping in after the break. It's been some time since he's been here. I know he will have plenty to say. It's been one hell of a week. Sarah Silverman shoots up YouTube's headquarters. Facebook is reading every message you send. Free thought is gone. Ladies and gentlemen, sit back and relax. My first guest is ready. What's going on, Mike? How are you?
Hey, not much. I'm doing good, Michael. How are you?
I really can't complain. It feels really good to be here tonight, and I hope you're doing well, Mike. It's
been I'm doing better than I have been for a while. I have had a few struggles, but by the way, I really liked that opening song. I thought that was really good. Who is that?
Oh, that's Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, Nine Inch Nails.
Head okay. Like a hole. Yes.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. it kind of sounds like Nine Inch Nails, so I was kind of wondering who it was.
Yeah, that's a usual intro for this program. I think it's well suited.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Oh, yes, love that. By the way, again, thank you for being here. I've been meaning to get you on this program for many, many years.
Well, I'm glad I could finally have a dead Saturday night. I could be on your show. Normally I'm out drinking beer at this time and watching some sort of sporting event, but lately I haven't been feeling too great. So, I'm here. I'm just, hanging out.
Mike, anytime I've ever talked to you, I've been drinking, and I'm going to continue that sort of, I guess you could say that sort of commitment, and I'm drinking now.
Oh, good. Well, I wish, maybe I should go get a beer.
You really
should.
Or a glass of wine. You really should.
No, I don't. You know what? Cause my biggest problem these days is that I tell the truth too often, and God knows if I start drinking, I'll tell the truth even more. So
that's a good idea. That's what I like to do here. Tell the truth.
Yeah. Well,
no matter
the
how
world
bad
doesn't
it hurts.
Like the truth. They don't like that.
They really don't.
The UFO community even more doesn't like people who tell the truth. So, about.
Yes.
UFOs and the UFO community. Those are two things they really don't like.
And I have plenty to talk to you about that in that respect. But before we get into any of that, I thought we could go back in time just a little bit here and go back into your roots here. I understand, of course, you are from Seattle. Big Seahawks fan. I know you are.
Yep. And Manchester City, who disappointed me enormously today in England. But hey, that's a different sport. So
yeah, that happens. So, Mike, how did you get involved into this, into conspiracies, into ancient aliens? Where did all this begin, this fascination for all these things?
Well, you know, honestly, I kind of had this ever since I was a little kid. I mean, I remember watching Gemini and Apollo missions as a little kid, just being fascinated by space and alien life and the idea that we were, you know, not alone. And I remember watching these missions and saying to myself, you know, this doesn't feel right. They're hiding something from us. There's something, you know, missing. And I remember the first moonwalk, you know, the TV was a horrible black and white picture. And I remember asking my dad, who was a very accomplished, successful engineer for Boeing. And I said, you know, Dad, we got a color TV. Why is this all black and white and crappy looking? And he said, I don't know. It seems like they should have been able to take a color camera up there and get us better pictures than this. And that was maybe one of the first times that I really started thinking that there's something not quite right with the world and with everything to do with NASA and space and all that. And then from there, you know, I kept the fascination over the years. I used to consume a lot of books and TV, and there was an awesome magazine back in those days in the 70s called Saga, S-A-G-A, which was basically nothing but aliens, UFOs, ghost stories, and half-naked girls.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah, as a teenager, it was the best magazine ever. So, because I'd buy it at the store, my mom would go, "What's that?" And I go, "Oh, it's a magazine about space." She'd look at it and go, "Oh, okay," you know.
Yeah.
And then there were pictures of models barely covered up by towels and things like that. So, I just progressed, and then as time went by, I ended up meeting a gentleman named Ken Johnston Jr. who knew Richard Hoagland, and I ended up connecting with Hoagland and started writing articles for him for his website. And at one point I just finally said, why don't we put all this stuff together into a book, which was ended up being Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA, and was the worst decision of my life, to be honest with you.
Was it really?
Oh, it was no fun. It was just miserable to write that book. That book was just really super stressful and way too big. It's now 600 pages. Should have been three books, really. And that's where it all took off from there. And I mean, as far as the conspiracy stuff goes, there was just always a suspicion, but what really turned me was TWA 800, the shoot down of the aircraft off Long Island just after takeoff from JFK, which, you know, as an aerospace engineer, guy had worked for Boeing and various other aerospace companies. I immediately knew was either a bomb or a missile. And of course, later on, it became very obvious it was a missile. And the cover up by the government of that event turned me into what I, you know, called a born again conspiracy theorist, where I had to go around and telling everybody, you know, there's conspiracies out there. It's real. It's all this stuff is actually real. And that's where I got started.
And you weren't an abductee or anything like that, correct?
No, never had any experiences like that, at least not consciously. I mean, I had a few dreams, but, you know, who doesn't have dreams about Grace coming in through their bedroom window and stuff?
That's true. Hey, it's happened to me before, so.
Yeah,
that happened.
So I guess what I'd say is, no, I had no experiences. I never saw a UFO until I started working on this program I did for Discovery Channel called Uncovering Aliens, which I thought was a terrible title. And had two sightings, one at the auditions in New York City in Brooklyn on the rooftop bar with a couple of my female co-stars.
Nice.
And, yeah, it was not a bad night. Two babes, several beers, and, flying saucers, alien spacecraft. And then again, when we were shooting in a place called Gerald, Arizona, which is near Sedona. And we were up there, and there was this guy in the cast, Stephen Jones, who's just a wonderful, sweet man, a British guy, and he was an abductee, and he was firmly convinced that, that aliens were here to help us in the next step of our evolution, as he used to put it. And I was like, you know, Steven, we didn't ask, so I don't really want the help. But anyway,
yeah.
we were there shooting at night and night vision stuff, and I had the camera, and we'd been there about 2 hours, and all the satellites and airplanes and everything had pretty much stopped appearing because the sun had moved low enough below the horizon that it wasn't really illuminating the satellites anymore. And we were about ready to pack up, and he goes, no, no, wait. And he holds his hands out, and he says, if you're out there, appear to us. And literally three flying saucers, spacecraft, whatever you want to call them, appeared in a triangle right above us, about 20 degrees above the horizon, 30 degrees, and hovered, and then they all started moving, intersecting with each other, and just kept moving until they all disappeared over the horizon or around behind us. And so I had those two experiences, and that's really been it.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah. Well,
I've always been curious if you...
Better than a jab in the eye with a sharp stick, as my dad used to say.
That's true, or you could have been stabbed like Corey Feldman.
Yeah, Jesus, was that weird or what?
I think he's full of shit, but that's just
really,
me.
Really, okay, interesting.
Yeah, I'm not buying it this time. He's the boy who cried wolf too many times.
Yeah, well, and he's never really, I mean, I think it's way past time for him to name some names, and I believe I know who some of the names are, and you know, I think he should start saying them because it's all going to come out anyway.
True. Right.
You know, the thing is, Michael, it's really interesting. What am I going to my 14-year-old cracking voice here tonight? it's really interesting because people in our community, in the UFO community, I mean, it's all over for, you know, all over Contact in the Desert. We're going to be talking about disclosure, and everybody wants to know about disclosure. And, you know, I'm going to be doing the New Living Expo in San Mateo at the end of the month in a couple weeks. And everybody wants to talk about disclosure. Are you going to talk about disclosure? And people don't really realize, I don't think, what disclosure really means, because it's like you think you're just going to get aliens, but that's not true. You're going to get everything. You're going to get the stuff you don't want to know about. And this process, you know, it's kind of be careful what you wish for, because yeah, they may be telling us some of the truth about aliens. They're also going to be telling us the truth about a lot of other stuff.
Right.
And a lot of other people that we have a lot of illusions about. And there are going to be a lot of shattered egos if disclosure really does happen on a large scale and in a big, you know, boom kind of a way. And I'm not sure people are really as prepared for it as they think they are.
I'm glad you brought that up. I think that comes from all the mainstream press. That story got a couple months back, the footage from To the Stars Academy. That made its rounds, and that created a bit of a buzz. Many researchers, however, tore it apart. And I believe I had brought in, well, I do believe, I brought in Stephen Bassett onto the program to talk a little bit about that. And wow, people really were not happy with Mr. Bassett. As soon as he mentioned Hillary and Podesta, people just got irritated. They weren't having it.
Well, you know, I mean, I think Steve's kind of off in a, you know, kind of a Pollyanna space about Podesta.
Understood. Yes.
There's an awful lot of things about him that are rumored out there that I've been told by various people are true, and they're not even nearly the worst of it. So, you know, we'll see what happens if this ever comes out, but that's the thing. They don't want to hear, I don't think people want to hear the truth, because the more I tell the truth, the more flack I get. So, you know, I'm like, but the thing is, I can't do this. I got into this to tell the truth, right? And not just my truth. You know, there's no my truth. People talk about my truth. Well, there's the truth and there's your opinion, and there's no my truth. So, I mean, you can, you know, stand behind your opinion, but I think over these next months and years, we got to be prepared to have our opinions shattered, because there's just going to be a lot of stuff that's going to shock people when it comes out.
Truly. And what exactly was your opinion on the whole media fascination with Tom DeLonge there for a couple weeks?
Well, I think it's a joke. I mean, this is a guy who put out picture of a Mylar balloon claimed it was an alien spacecraft. You know, I mean, I've really never heard of the guy. I guess he was in a band called Blink 182, who I have heard of, and I never listened to their music. My girlfriend, a while back, about a year ago, did play me a few of their songs, and now I know why I never listened to it.
Oh,
but
my.
He's a musician.
Right.
Okay. He's a musician who's a fanboy. He's right. Not a UFO researcher, and he's not a serious UFO researcher, and there are a lot of us in the community, me, people like Dolan, people like Linda Moulton Howe, who are serious, and you know, I think everybody sees the money and all the shiny stuff and, you know, thinks that they're important, but I mean, it's really ended up embarrassing us as a community because we embrace this guy without any, really asking any questions. Well, like, who's working for you and what's their background? How much experience do they have? How are you going to vet things? You know, all the guy had to do is take that image and put it in the tin eye. And he would have known that it's all over the web and it's not a UFO, it's a Mylar balloon. And it's like that because we embrace this guy, now the rest of us look stupid. And that's the biggest reason why I get mad about stuff and why I confront people, not publicly very often, although I do that. It's because I'm like, you know, we all have a responsibility to the rest of us to not make the rest of us look like idiots. That's the minimum you can do. You know, first do no harm, right? To the community. First,
sure.
Do no harm. So I don't have a very high opinion of it. It does seem kind of like a money-making thing. You know, he's not really putting that much of his own money into it. He says he has contacts. Maybe he does. I'm not too impressed with him, nor am I impressed with the things that have come out. So, including the Mylar balloon, which was not the only thing, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, well, I think your opinion is pretty spot on, and it's kind of echoes the rest of what other people have been saying lately about that whole incident going on there. But
you know, the problem is that we had to look, you know, we ended up looking like idiots before people finally started saying something about it. So it's like I don't know, just the fact that he was so immediately embraced by people, but some of the people is just it's disappointing to me. People that, you know, they're just, I guess there's some folks that have shows like yours that are just interested in attracting listeners, viewers, and making money.
Oh, well,
so
of course.
They'll
of course.
Jump on anything.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. And here on this program, I do like to have some fun. But to that regard, though, I do like to tell the truth as much as humanly possible here. I like to be completely transparent. And being that we are very transparent here, I've been to plenty of conferences. You've lectured at plenty of conferences. We've been to plenty of these things over the years, and I can't help but feel plenty of these people that walk around and give talks at various conferences. I don't think a lot of them are genuine, to be completely honest with you, Mike.
I can't say.
I don't mean to name names here and burn any more bridges,
well,
but you know, it's kind of true though, but. To be honest, Mike, I already burned plenty of bridges the last 5 years, so it's not a big problem. Not a big problem to me. But you know, I see names like Jaime Mazan or Mazan, whatever, and
Mazan.
Yeah. You know, I've known that name since I was a child,
mm-hmm.
and anytime I've heard that name, I already knew what was going on with him.
Mm-hmm.
And all these people seem to keeping him around. Not a good look.
Yeah, and I mean, the next time I see some of them, I'm gonna kinda ask them why they got involved with this guy, because, I mean, look, wasn't the Roswell slides embarrassing enough from him? Now we gotta come back a year later with this idiotic Gaia fake mummy bullshit out of Peru, and
I'm glad we're on the same page here, cause all these things I was gonna ask you about, but yes.
Well, I mean, it almost ruined Dolan's career and Don Schmidt, who, you know, who's a guy that I really like and I think is a, you know, very serious, genuine guy. And
I like him too. He's a nice guy.
Yeah. And they got involved with this and it's just like they ended up looking like idiots because it was,
that's
you know, it was just a human mummy.
$25 to do that.
So, wow. I mean, you know, there are people and I hesitate to name names, but there are people that I, you know, I guess what I'd like to do is just to tell people who I'm not talking about. Okay. I'm not talking about David Wilcock, who is a very sweet man, very bright, intelligent person. And I know a lot of people don't like him, but he's always been wonderful to me. And I think he's very serious about what he does.
You find him credible.
A lot of things, yeah, I do. And the things I disagree with him on are just the things I disagree with him on. There's nobody in this community I agree with 100%.
Oh, of course not.
Including, you know, Mr. Hoagland, who I wrote a book with years ago. So it's like, I don't pay super close attention to everything he says either, but every time I've been around him, I've experienced him as a very genuine human being, a very serious, researcher and an incredibly bright guy who's brought forward some really, really important information. So that's a guy I really like. And, you know, I mean, Linda is very thorough and very smart and fun to be around. And Stan Friedman, of course, is the gold standard for how you do things like this. Dr. Bob Wood, who's a documents expert, is a wonderful man and very serious and super smart. And people like Schmidt, and you know, Dolan and I have had our differences over the years, but I think a lot of that was a misunderstanding. I definitely back most of his work at this point, but you know, I mean, there's a lot of people that I don't, that, you know, they have egos and things get involved and that's a big problem in our community too, really, is the fact that people end up, you know, when somebody like DeLong comes along, there's a lot of jealousy. And everybody wants to tear him down. I mean, Bob Lazar got torn apart when he first appeared.
That's true.
On the scene by the UFO community. And right. I will tell you this about Lazar. I've never met him, but I can tell you as an aerospace engineer that he is not a cook or a garbage man at Area 51. This guy is either a scientist, a physicist, or an engineer. I can just tell by the way he talks, the phrases he used, the things that he knows, the depth of his intellect. So say anything you want about Lazar, he's not a fake in terms of that stuff. And I can totally believe that they would erase his identity, as he says that they did, you know? So it's like, I look at how he got treated by people and it's just really, really unpleasant. And the reason that he got treated badly is because he had a better story than they did.
Yeah, they kind of buried him way back in the 90s.
Yeah, or they tried to. And, you know, he kind of eventually sort of gave up and stopped talking. But he's a guy I'd love to see back on the circuit because I think he has a great story to tell that's important for people to hear because it might be true.
You're right about that. And I tried to sort of convince John Lear to give me his contact last time I talked to John.
Yeah.
I'm still working on it though.
Well, there's a couple of different John Lear Facebook pages and I'm not sure if the one that interacts with me is really the real one or not.
Well, John's been on the program.
Yeah. Well, I can't, I'd love to
like, you talk to him or what?
With him. Yeah,
next time,
I just don't,
here's
I'm never sure if the guy I'm talking to on Facebook is actually the real John Lear, because there's a lot of people out there in person.
Yeah, that's true. Well, here's what I'll do, Mike. I'll bring in John Lear, and I'll have you co-host with me.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Love to talk. I'd love to exchange some moon pictures and things and talk about them. So,
yeah, we could do that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Now, going back to Richard Hoagland. What's going on with him? When's the last time you talked to him? Are you in good standing with him or is there a little friction there, Mike? The last time we talked, I think you might not have been.
Well, I mean, not from my perspective, there's no friction.
Ah, okay. No problem.
Apparently there is with him.
Oh, and, that's not
you
good.
You know, I people occasionally send me things that he says about me on his tiny audience little radio program that he's got. And, you know, I don't know why. I mean, I seem to be on better terms with his girlfriend, Robin than with him. But I mean, I've never said anything bad about him in public. I'm not going to. But I haven't spoken to him in years, to be honest.
Oh, so, really? I thought you might have interacted with him more recently.
No, and I don't really at this point have much need to because I'm really not.
Oh, I see.
I'm really kind of off doing my own thing and I'm really not so much in his direction. Although, you know, talk to the folks over at Ancient Aliens. They pretty much have me pigeonholed to the moon, Mars, NASA guys. I keep telling them, but I can talk about all these other things too. I wrote a book about the Mayans. I wrote a book about the Egyptians. See?
You're going to talk to William Henry about that.
Yeah. Well, that's true. William's got a lot of pull over there.
Yeah. You got to ask that guy.
Yeah, and well deserved. He's a great guy. Great researcher.
Yeah, I like
too.
William and his
wife.
Yeah,
it's another one I should have mentioned. Great people. That I like is Mr. Henry is really on top of things.
Yeah, so. I dig him. Great guy. And lots happening in the UFO community. Lots of in-house fighting going on. That's kind of what's been going on a lot lately, right?
Right. And the thing is, you know, again, I did write this book back in 2010 called The Choice. And in it, I told everybody that there would be polarization and conflict. And I mean, our community is not exempt from that during this because of the physical changes going on in the solar system and into our, and that's affecting our consciousness. And I've told people this is going to be going on until at least 2023, maybe even beyond that. And so all this chaos and transition that you see, this is all, I'm sitting there going, yeah, I pretty much predicted this. Yeah, I pretty much predicted that. The one thing that I've predicted that hasn't come true in that book yet is still to happen, but it seems like we're on the brink of it. But as part and parcel to that, I mean, I think that the conflict going on within our community is the same. It's the same thing. I think everybody's kind of picking sides and we're struggling with belief systems and double checking what we believe and who we believe in. And I just think our community's experiencing the same thing. You know, I think it's probably time for some people to move on and we'll see what happens with the future.
Lots of other names to go over, but one that comes to mind immediately is Corey Good.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that? I've never personally heard too much of his story. I've had other people, you know, third hand information, that sort of thing. But I haven't really dug too deep into it. All I know is something about blue aliens. That's all I really heard.
Yeah, the blue avians. Okay, so on Corey, a lot of people like to slag off on Corey, and I get it because he's very popular and he draws really big crowds. And, you know, again, I think a lot of that is jealousy. I will say this about him is that I didn't really know what to think about him in terms of him personally, but I've met him now twice, and he is a super nice guy. I mean, he's just a really super nice guy, appears to be very genuine, and I would have a beer with him anytime. I mean, I think he's a great guy. Now, having said that about him personally, that I believe in his, you know, his integrity, I believe in that. I get no sense from him that he's making anything up at all. And I would never really question that, but I mean, as a person, I feel like I'm dealing with a genuine person when I'm dealing with him. And as far as his information, well, he honestly has no proof of any of it. And I think he would even acknowledge that. He's just saying, this is my story. You know, take it for what it is. Take it or leave it. I'm a guy who doesn't like to say things unless I feel like I can prove it, or at least I can back it up to a great extent. And, you know, Corey's not doing that. And that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, but gosh, that's just the way things are, you know? I mean, that's the nature of his story. Now, I have been told by people that I do like and I do trust that do have some inside information that, you know, the stories that he tells about civilizations living inside the earth and hollowed out caverns and things are true, are real, that there's actually two civilizations living inside the earth of beings that are not necessarily human. And now, would I go around and talk about that or give people details? No, I've never been down there. I've never seen the installations. I've never, you know, I can't back that up, but I have been told that. So I found it interesting that without any connection to Corey, that other people came forward to me and talked to me about this stuff, kind of like not associated with him. So, you know, that's what I'll say about his information. I can't back up any of it, but,
right.
But I don't get any sense from him that he's on an ego trip or he's a scam artist or he's trying to, you know, lead people in the wrong direction. I don't get any sense of that at all.
I hear you.
From him.
Yeah, I can't really say myself because I haven't really spent too much time looking up anything he talks about. However, in regards to a secret space program, I sort of feel like there's no doubt something of that nature existed. You could just look at something like Project Horizon, as you always talk about, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And so forth.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things like that that would lead one to believe that there definitely is a secret space program, Mike.
Well, I wrote a book last year called Hidden Agenda, and it was called, subtitle was NASA and the Secret Space Program. And what I wanted to do is, because there was all this information out there about secret space programs, I wanted to look at it and say, okay, how much information is there really that this is a thing, or that it could have been a thing, or that it was at one time a thing? And what I found out in just digging through the background was that there was a lot more than I expected. There was a lot of stuff going on, especially in the post-war period, research into field drive propulsion systems. Wernher von Braun was involved in that. The Germans were obviously working on very high-level advanced super physical craft at the end of the war. And there were American inventors. There was people like T. Townsend Brown, who was onto something, I think, with his research. And ended up, you know, it all kind of culminated in the 1950s with aerospace companies like Hughes and, you know, the type of companies I used to work for, openly asking and advertising for people to work on anti-gravity propulsion systems. And then in 1958, Brown makes a presentation to the military, to the Navy and the Defense Department, and says, I want to make an American flying saucer, and here's how I think we can do it. And they take his report, I think it was called Project 17, take his report, say thank you very much, and then all of that public anti-gravity stuff just ceases. All the papers and the journals are all stopped. Everything is withdrawn. They're not advertising for people. It just goes black. And to me, that's an indication that, yeah, they felt like they'd made a breakthrough. They were onto something. And they moved on, you know, I think they moved on from there and built some of these spacecraft that we see in some of these space shuttle videos, which are just really extraordinary. So I think there's definitely nuts and bolts. There's definitely evidence, proof that we have or had a secret space program at one time.
And as far as Mars is concerned, I've talked to several people about this. Even one, Robert David Steele, who's been on this program. He did mention colonies being on Mars. I'm not sure why he did, but that caused a bit of an issue between him and Alex Jones. I don't think he's allowed back on his program anymore after that.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I didn't follow that particular story or that particular guy. I don't know that guy. But people do say this, and you know, I mean, there are stories that some of the astronauts, early Mercury, Apollo, Gemini astronauts, were, you know, complaining about the rickety, crappy rockets they had to go up in versus, the amazing stuff that the secret space program had, and they'd already been to the moon and already been to Mars and all this stuff. And, you know, certainly the truth is that we had the capacity technologically, even in the 1960s, to set up a permanent base on the moon if we wanted to. It could have been done. And there's, you know, no reason to think it was not done at all. So, I guess where I stand on that is maybe, probably, but.
It's possible.
We don't have, well, I would say probable, but maybe. we don't have any proof of it right now. I don't think the stuff that I look at in the Apollo photos that have been publicly released, I don't think any of that stuff is any of our secret bases. I think that's old technology, old civilizations that don't exist anymore that left some really amazing stuff behind.
Yeah, Robert Brandenburg, I believe, talks about that too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. Yes. John, you mean John?
John Brandenburg. Why did I call him Robert?
Yeah, I don't know.
My goodness.
I think there was a physicist named Robert Brandenburg or something along those lines.
Probably, yes. I'm thinking of multiple people here, but yes, that's always been fascinating. The subject of Mars, of course, going back to, I think it was Michael Carr back in the 70s. Didn't he say something during the orbiter, the Viking 2 orbiter, right? He saw some weird photos up there.
There were those kinds of reports. There was, a lot of astronauts had UFO experiences up there that they mostly didn't talk about. So it was that kind of thing.
What a time to be alive. And another issue here, Mike, that people always mention anytime, I hear your name mentioned, or even myself when I mentioned you'd be on the program, lots of folks wanted me to ask you about the moon landing and if that actually happened. What do you think?
Okay. I realize most of this is from people who are too young to remember the moon landings.
People love this, by the way.
And I will tell you that I cover this extensively in my new book, which is coming out soon, Ancient Aliens and JFK, because you can't really talk about JFK without talking about NASA and the space program and Apollo. And I cover two different aspects of that conspiracy theory. And what I will tell you in a simple answer is flatly, yes, we went to the moon. No question about it. None of the arguments against it stand up to even the most basic scrutiny. And it's, there's absolutely was nothing holding us back from going to the moon except, you know, our own human frailties. And as it turned out, we did a wonderful job. We got most of the crews, we got all the crews back and we, you know, we were six out of seven on landing and walking on the moon, which I think is extremely impressive considering the technology that we were working with at the time. I think it's phenomenal. And so there's absolutely no question in my mind that we went to the moon to answer that question. And I will lay it out point by point by point in my new book, Ancient Aliens and JFK, which should be coming out by the end of the month.
I want to read that now.
Well, yeah, you should.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's going to be a great book. Excuse me.
Yeah, no problem. By the way, going back to the TV show Ancient Aliens, holy crap, I can't believe it's been around that long. You would think they would run out of material by now, right?
Well, I mean, no, because there's always, you know, look, you've only got an hour, and an hour of TV in, with all the advertising today is only 42 minutes. Is there any one subject you can cover in 42 minutes? No, not in any great depth or detail. True. So I think they've done three or four Mars episodes, three or four moon episodes. I mean, we could keep going back, and I keep giving them new stuff. I said, you know, we could talk about this, we could talk about that. We could talk about ancient aliens and physics and, you know, can the light barrier be broken and all kinds of things we could talk about. So I think, you know, the thing about the show that's really amazing is the quality of it is still so good. It's not jumped the shark at all. When I do interviews for them, I mean, they ask me tough questions. They press me. They really try to get to the depth of these things. And just do a wonderful job. And, you know, you watch the show and it's so brilliantly edited and pieced together and the narrative is so strong and the visual effects are just off the scale. And to me, it's like, it's a fantastic show. It's like a cultural phenomenon. And I think it's just going to continue on until history decides they don't want to make it anymore. I don't see the ratings really dropping ever because people are still going to be fascinated by this.
Oh yeah. I give that show plenty of credit for opening doors to a completely new audience since many people thought the subject of UFOs was kind of done by now. However, that's not true.
No, I agree with you. It's not true. And you know, honestly, I think that every season that they do has the possibility of being the best season that they've ever done because I just see consistent quality. And that goes down to people like the executive producer, like David Silver, who's just a wonderful guy to work with, who's an amazing producer and just runs the ship with such precision that it's just really off the scale how good it is. And I think as long as you have guys like that, there aren't changes in upper level management at either the network or Prometheus, I think you're going to continue to just get, you know, a wonderful, wonderful show. And, honestly, I think we should do an episode on Kubrick's Odyssey, don't you? I think we should do an episode on the whole Stanley Kubrick fake the moon landings thing, because that's an entire chapter in my new book all by itself.
Would they allow that, though?
I mean, don't know.
Would they dedicate themselves to a whole program on that?
Why not?
It'd be fun.
It would be great.
Yeah.
I think it would be great, and I could break down the whole thing for them. But the problem is that my conclusion is that the idea that Stanley Kubrick filmed the moon landings is utterly ridiculous. And that's not really what Ancient Aliens wants. Ancient Aliens wants to get to a point where it's an open question, you know?
True.
And so I don't think that would really fit. That I might end up being more successful on Skeptics TV than I would be on Ancient Aliens for that one. So.
Well, I mean, they did do an episode on zombies, so.
That's true. I hadn't really known that. Was there an Aliens and Zombies episode?
Something of that nature, if I recall.
That's
yeah.
Crazy.
I didn't watch it. I just saw the name there and I just thought, oh, yeah, I don't know what to say about that one, but.
No.
Yeah.
Well, there was one they were going to do, Good Aliens times. In the Old West, when there was, what was it, Cowboys and Aliens?
They
called me up and
they did do that.
Said,
they did do
can't
that.
Help you, can't help you with that one, guys. I got nothing. So that was one where.
How can you even be on that episode and talk about that subject with a straight face?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I didn't see the episode,
oh,
really. I don't think I watched that one. I only watch the ones that I'm in, actually. So, that's not true. I watch them all the time. Sometimes I just sit there and I'm like, why am I not in this one? And, So, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to trash the episode. I don't know. I'll have to sit down and watch it at some point. I think it's season 5 or 6 or something, isn't it?
Well, make sure you have a beer in hand for that one.
Yeah.
It's going to be a rough ride.
Well, it's just not my area. I just, you know, I don't, the Old West, that period of history just doesn't fascinate me at all. Now, if they wanted to do aliens and the Bible or aliens and Romans, I'd be totally down with that because I'm totally into that period.
Jesus is kind of like a zombie.
Yeah, it could be.
That's going to offend people, by the way.
What?
What I just said. But that's okay. That's the point of the program. Sometimes you're going to have to step on a few toes, Mike.
I'm stepping on toes all over the place tonight. I mean, I just trashed.
Love that.
Tom DeLonghi, and I like to call him Tom DeLonghi because he's got that extra E on his name. And fake alien mummies.
Well, you know, Mike, I think
I'm kind of
Mike. I think you deserved it. I mean, you've taken plenty of shots throughout the past 10 years. Blog sites, all sorts of websites. You just Google your name and all sorts of people are trashing you, Mike. So
the thing is, no, there's not all sorts of people. It's actually one.
Is it one guy?
Possibly two guys. And they're psychopaths. And I mean, they are crazy. Like they have threatened to physically attack me.
Have they?
I really think it's just the one nutbag, but there might be a second one. I'm not sure. There might be a second one, but it's like they create all these different websites and try to make it look like there's all these people that are attacking me, and it's really just one guy.
They really don't like you, Mike. It seems like you've done something horrible to them.
Well, I have. I've humiliated them and made them look like idiots repeatedly. So, you know, everything they say about me is a freaking lie. Can I F-bomb on this show? Is this internet radio?
You could say whatever you want here. It's totally fine.
Okay, everything they said about me is a fucking lie. So, you know, I mean, it's pretty, and the thing is, I just reached a point 3 or 4 years ago where it's like, okay, you know, I respond to this. I took about a dozen of my responses to them and, you know, and a couple other people they tried to hook up with. And I laid it out and I said, look, you know, if you read this stuff about me on the internet, just go here and read all this stuff. And I mean, you know, you can only prove somebody wrong so many times. And then it's like, what's the point? I simply don't have any time or energy to waste on that anymore. So I just don't even bother. I blocked them completely from everything. I never see anything they put up anymore. So I assume that they, you know, lurk around all my different pages. They're probably criticizing me now for creating an Instagram for my cat, which I did recently. So
I see nothing wrong with the cat.
No, the Lady Aurora, by the way, on Instagram. Look her up, 33. That's her name. That's her on Instagram. So
very cool.
I thought she deserved her own Instagram. I just did.
That's a good choice. And going back to the whole zombie discussion, if I remember correctly, you are a Walking Dead fan, aren't you?
No, not anymore.
Sarcasm.
No. Yes. Well, it's God. I mean, do you watch it? I just think it's.
I tried, Mike. You know, I gave it a big shot there the last season, but just totally not interested.
It's like these long, boring,
it's too
slow,
long,
sweaty Georgia conversations about philosophy, and it's like, well, I thought this was a zombie show, you know. And I mean, I think the first year and a half before Shane died was terrific. And I think it was still pretty good for a while after that. And then it's just become, it's almost become a parody of itself. It's so awful. And yet the problem is I'm so invested with all this time that I have to at least watch it until Negan dies. You know, I at least have to watch it until Jeffrey Dean Morgan gets killed. But God, when is that going to be? They're dragging that out forever too.
Aren't you disappointed, Mike? It seems like we have less and less. Fewer television shows and movies now that are, well, for instance, there's no good, like, movie about aliens, really. There hasn't been one in so long. And same with Bigfoot. Have you ever tried watching a movie on Bigfoot? They've all been so awful.
Well, I'm currently working with a producer on a script for a Bigfoot movie. So.
Oh my God. Are you?
So hang on to your hats on that one.
Will there be aliens in there?
Well, no. They're not in this script, but maybe in the sequel when we figure out why the Sasquatches turned on us the way they did. Maybe we can, maybe we'll put aliens in it. That's a good idea. I hadn't thought about that, but you know, I'm waiting till I get paid to do the sequel before I start thinking about the sequel.
Smart move.
Yeah, that's what I try to do. So who knows? Maybe there will ultimately be a zombie movie or TV movie out there. Not a zombie, but a Sasquatch movie or out there. But it needs to be that. And yeah, I mean, the last really good alien film was Dark Skies with, J.K. Simmons, is that his name, was in it. And that was the last real alien abduction film that was ever, that was done.
Yeah, it wasn't,
and that's
it wasn't awful.
5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, it might have been 6 years ago now. It wasn't that awful. It was all right.
No, I thought it was pretty good. It was a little dark, but it was Dark Skies. That was what it was called. So, yeah, 2013, directed by Scott Stewart. I thought it was a pretty good movie. But again, there has been nothing since then.
There really hasn't. It's, you know,
I mean,
really...
all we have now are these comic book movies, just pull things out of their rear ends. And we have so many, they're so politically correct and they're so dumb. God, I watched Justice League the other night and it was just awful. It's just beyond awful. I mean, it was so bad. And I'm like, why do these things keep making money? And I mean, I realized Justice League didn't make as much money as a lot of other comic book movies, but I just can't bring myself to go to them anymore because it seems to me like I know exactly what's going to happen. And I've already seen this movie 20 times. So
that same old formula, man, it's god awful.
Well, even when you have a formula, they can't seem to make it work anymore. I mean, the last comic book movie that was decent was, The Dark Knight Rises, probably. And, the rest of them have just been absolute crap. So, yet they make ridiculous amounts of money. So, the Comic-Con culture is here, and it doesn't have very high standards.
Very low standards.
Well, I mean, I wonder what you could do, what would happen if you made a really good, a really good sci-fi or comic book movie. It's a good question. But, I've actually seen some pretty good TV shows. I mean, I've seen some pretty good stuff streaming. I stream Travelers on, I think it's Netflix. And that is a really excellent show. I mean,
Story's already bullshit.
What's that?
I said Story's already bullshit.
Story's already bullshit. Why is that?
I'm joking.
No. I thought it was really excellently done. The only thing that I will say I don't like about it is when I watch an adult show on a premium network, I expect, nudity, and there's none. But I'm joking.
Well,
it's a really good sci-fi show.
Well, that's a good complaint.
Yeah, well, it is. And it's a good sci-fi show, and it's really pretty imaginative, and it didn't really keep me guessing. I mean, I guessed a few times, but there were a couple times I was fooled. And the acting and the writing and the direction are top notch. And Eric, God, what's his name? The star of the show. He's in Will and Grace. I think he's Will. What's his name? Eric, the actor's name. I'm on IMDb. I guess I should just look it up. He stars as a guy who takes over the body of Eric McCormick, takes over the body, of an FBI agent, and he looks so much like Duchovny in the X-Files that I can't get over it. I keep thinking I'm looking at an episode of the X-Files. So that was a good show. And then Altered Carbon started out really, really, speaking of shows with boobs, that one's got plenty of it, folks. But it started out pretty slow, but then it picked up, and by the end of it, I was engaged. I thought that was a good show. So there's stuff out there, but it's all on I think kind of obscure, channels. Counterpart. Did you watch Counterpart? Counterpart was really good with the aforementioned J.K. Simmons.
I did hear it, but I heard it was good, but I didn't get to watch it.
No, I would pick it up. It's an interesting show with a sci-fi, flavor to it. It's not purely sci-fi. It's more espionage, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, I'll take a watch or two. Right. By the way, another good show that goes under the radar is The Preacher. That was a fun show.
Really? I haven't seen that one. Who's the star of that one?
That was a direct by, who was that? Seth Rogen, I think it was.
Oh, okay. All right.
And it has a few actors in there that are kind of, I don't think they're that known, however, some of the people in there.
I don't know. I'm not finding it. Are you sure that's the name of it?
Yeah, it's called Preacher.
Oh, Preacher.
Just Preacher, yeah. Yeah, I think you would like that.
Oh, 2016, okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cast now, and I'm like, I don't think you're going to be familiar with any of these people. Most people won't. Unless you're really watching this. Yeah, Dominic Cooper.
I think I may know who that is. He's
been in, like, plenty of movies, but he's always that character that you really, you see him, but you don't really think much of him. He's kind of like a character actor.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's getting the credit he deserves, getting those good roles now.
Yeah.
Yeah, good for him. Good for him.
Okay, and so what service is that on? I'm looking at it here.
That reminds me, the movie he did come out in that was pretty badass was called The Devil's Double.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, all right. I'll have to see.
Saddam.
I'll have to watch this one.
He plays Saddam Hussein's double.
Oh, yeah. I remember that movie.
Love this movie.
Yeah. It's pretty, pretty amazing, that one. That was like, wow, what a horrible life to live, huh?
No kidding. By the way, did you see Sarah Silverman shooting up YouTube's headquarters? That woman looks like Sarah Silverman, don't you think?
A little bit.
Kind of, right?
So, did you hear the latest is that...
What's the latest?
Well, then, first of all, the mainstream media has completely dropped it, which means it's a story you should pay attention to. When they found out she was, you know, Persian with an Iranian name, probably Muslim, and then other people are saying they think she used to be a guy, and there's pictures of her apparently as a guy, so that she's a transsexual on top of that. So, really not the narrative they want of the, you know, white male NRA member, who, by the way, people, if you don't know this, know there's never been a mass shooting by a member of the NRA ever. So, as far as we know. So, anyway, there's that, that aspect of it. That's the latest thing, is that apparently, that of course may be the reason why that she is no longer discussed in the news. Just been dropped.
You think the shooter was a transgendered individual?
That's what people are saying, and they're showing pictures of her apparently before she had her change over as a man.
I didn't see that, but she definitely.
Well,
he definitely has a strange figure.
Yeah, it's not trending on Twitter anymore. So.
Ah.
You know, I think that's really the biggest danger we're facing right now is the censorship of social media and by the technology companies, really.
Well, Facebook is reading every message you send, and they're reading everything. But, I mean, they've been reading your text messages on any device you have and listening to your conversation from everywhere. Even this conversation here is being listened to.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Although we're not interesting enough, I don't think, for anybody to really do anything bad to us, do you?
No, but I mean, all these things are on record. They could pull them up and get that easy. Even though they claim it's not, that's a bit of a lie. Most people don't know.
I keep trying to drink some water. I'm sorry, but there's like...
Oh, go ahead.
On this version of Skype, there's apparently no mute button, or at least I can't seem to find it. So, anyway.
I hope you're not on the new version of Skype, by the way. It's awful.
The new one? Yeah, I am.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it just shows the logo of your show, and there's like no mute button. There's no way for me to control the conversation. Oh, it's trying to take a picture of me. Okay, good. So that's the latest information. Are you there?
I'm here. I'm just wondering about when does all this sort of thing end? It seems like we have this huge issue here in America with these shootings that keep occurring here. It's almost like the new normal. I say this on every program now.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of these are staged. I mean, let's face it. We know that these things are being staged. They're being arranged. They're CIA ops. I mean, you know, the thing is that there was this guy QAnon, who may or may not have a real person inside the White House. I think it was QAnon. Posted about 2 weeks before the Las Vegas shooting to not go to Vegas, and if you do not be outside in large crowds, and basically said something's going to happen. And, you know, a week or two later, it did happen. So a lot of these events are staged. That thing, that Vegas case is the strangest case ever. And I just think what's going on is there's a war behind the scenes. And you know, we're not seeing all of it. We're seeing some of it publicly. Because Trump is getting out there and, you know, forcing the issue with a lot of this stuff. And, you know, I just think it's going to lead to more polarization and conflict and until some of the rumored things that are supposed to go down actually start happening, if in fact they do.
You're probably right. How do you feel about President Trump? Where do you grade where do you grade him? He's been in office a while now.
Yeah. How do I grade him?
Yeah. How do you grade him? Like in a... Through like A through, well, you know, the regular standard procedure of how you would grade anyone.
I think they should carve out a spot for him on Mount Rushmore is how I feel about him.
So A+.
I think my entire life for somebody to come along and just speak bluntly to people about the reality of the situation that we're in. And he pretty much does this, and he's made very few mistakes, and most of the mistakes he's made have turned out to be actually games, ploys by him to sucker people in to making mistakes. And honestly, I think he's running circles around the people, the people in the government, the deep state, that are bluntly trying to kill him. I think they've given up trying to stop him, and now they're just going to try to kill him. And I think he's a very courageous person for doing this and taking all the flack that he's taking. So I think in terms of policy, I think we need to close our southern border. We have all kinds of drugs and money coming in, illegal money, funds coming in through that southern border. And it is funding the bad guys, the cabal, the Bushes, the Clintons, the Obamas, the people, George Soros, the people that represent the, in my opinion, the true evil in the world. And he's fighting them. And, you know, I think I support that. And I mean, tax cuts, who doesn't love a tax cut? And so, you know, I think all these things are good. The economy's moving along much stronger than it was the last 8 years. And, you know, I do support his agenda, and I don't have any problems with him personally. I mean, who didn't know that the guy was a billionaire playboy before this?
A bit of a wild man.
You know, so it's like people that don't like him, it's a personal thing or it's a political thing where just anybody who's quote conservative is got to be evil. Well, he's not very conservative. He never has been. He's hired a lot of blacks and women and gay people in his organizations for decades, way before it was popular. So, you know, I mean, he's basically a social liberal for the most part and a financial conservative. And I think that's it's a pretty good mix. So, you know, at this point, I think, you know, here's the thing. There's a lot of people in our community that are hippies, and hippies believe certain things.
Lots of hippies,
which
yes.
Are wrong. And have been proven wrong decades ago, but they continue to believe in them because it's their whole worldview. It's their agenda. It's what they've been taught to believe or hope to believe. So, that worldview is taking a beating right now. And this has generated an awful lot of anger and angst among the people whose worldview is taking a beating. I mean, you look at the sun is quiet as hell, and you know, we still got snow. We're having more snowstorms in the middle of April on the East Coast, and that kind of blows the whole global warming thing, right? That blows the whole global warming agenda. So, part of all that is that we've already had significant disclosure, right? We've had the JFK assassination papers documents released, and it appears sometime this month we're scheduled to get even more. And so here's the thing. People that say that they want disclosure but hate Trump, I don't see how you can do that, because the only way you're going to get disclosure is through Trump. The deep state, the people who are his enemies, are the people who have kept all these secrets for decades, for 60 or 70 years or even longer than that. So it's like you can't, to my mind, I don't see how you can hate Trump and want disclosure, because the only way you're going to get it is if Trump forces things out into the open, because he's the only guy, and his allies, and he's backed, I hear, by the Marines and a few other people. That's the only way you're going to get any disclosure. And I think we've had more disclosure really in the last year and a few months since he's been president than we've had in the previous 20 or 30 years before that. I mean, the same people who hate Trump loved Obama, and we had him for 8 years. And what did we get out of him? Nothing. So I think he's our last best hope to get to the truth of some of these things. But as I said earlier, be careful what you wish for, because you're not going to like some of the truth that's going to come out. It's going to be more than just aliens. It's going to be a lot of other stuff you're going to find quite unpleasant and uncomfortable.
By the way, you mentioned a few names there. Lots of people want to see certain individuals get arrested, go to jail over some of these things. But are we really going to see that, though? It's almost like no one ever gets arrested anymore.
Well, that's a good question, and I don't know the answer. I'm waiting just like everybody else. I know that there are rumors, which appear to be solid based on some people's research, that there are all these sealed indictments out there, and many of them are considered to be a prominent people, people that you would know. For instance, Tony Podesta, John Podesta's brother, has apparently disappeared from the face of the earth. Nobody can seem to find the guy. Hillary was walking around first with an ankle bracelet, and now she's got a wrist thing on, and everybody's like, well, is she wearing a monitor? I mean, has she already been, is it catch and release? Have they already caught these people, brought them in, questioned them, charged them, strapped a bracelet on? Remember John McCain? He switched the walking boot.
I saw that.
On his feet.
I wasn't sure if that was a real photo or not, but
it is a real.
It's
photo.
A real photo.
Yeah, I've done it. It's a real photo. Hmm. And
weird.
And it's like, you know, what does that mean? Yeah. I mean, so until some of the big names actually get arrested, we don't know. We won't know if any of this stuff is true. But I hear other people say, well, that's not going to happen that way. You're going to see a bunch of the little people around them get picked off first. And that does seem to be happening. I mean, you look at, we're in an unprecedented period of resignations and retirements from Congress, from corporate boards, CEOs. I mean, we're seeing literally massive amounts of people dropping from their positions of power and privilege, leaving. And it seems like that is part of this, you know, swamp draining that's going on. And maybe it is. I mean, look at all the actors and celebrities that have gone down in the last year and a half.
It's
quite extraordinary. And, you know, there's a website called backpage.com,
it's funny you mentioned that. I was going to talk about that on the second half of this program, but yeah, backpage.com. My goodness. I have a friend of mine who actually used that website a few times, and he was trying to get me to do that one day. And I was like, dude, I'm way too paranoid for any of that.
Yeah.
Way too paranoid.
But it's been seized by the government, you know, because there's been child trafficking going on. And there's
see what I mean?
Classifieds. There's men seeking women, hookups, that kind of thing. There's stuff going on there that's not illegal, but there's other stuff going on that is apparently illegal. And then you go back and you look at Trump's tweets talking about he's going to go after the child traffickers. You know, he says that. And then this happens. The government seizes it. And there are executive orders on the White House website specifically detailing what they're going to do to go after these child traffickers. And child trafficking arrests are way up under Trump. So, you know, it seems there's a pattern emerging here, and it's being followed.
Now, what's your opinion on Stormy Daniels? That's a big discussion still nowadays. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I met Stormy Daniels once.
Is she a nice woman?
At a party in L.A., Lexi Tyler's birthday party in 2007, right about the time this was all happening. And, you know, I've met her. There's somewhere on my computer buried, there's a picture of me and her at Lexi Tyler's birthday party, just like there's a picture of her and Donald Trump.
Right.
I didn't fuck her either, so.
Well, I would have given you credit if you did.
Yeah, I would have. I would, like, definitely be bragging about that if it did happen. And that was back when she was really hot too. She's still
not that bad.
Oh, she's
for an older woman.
She's an attractive woman.
She's still pretty good looking.
Pupils are a little dilated for my taste, but
well, that's from having a good time, Mike. You know how that goes. Yeah.
But you know, I don't know. It's possible it happened. It's not outside of Trump's character. Trump has made no secret of, you know, who the fact that he liked to date a lot of women and have sex with them. Isn't that part of the reason why you want to be a billionaire?
That's true.
To get chicks. I mean, that's part of the reason. So it could have happened, but I think there's two things that, you know, make me wonder whether it really did happen. Number one, a woman who was a friend of hers and did spend a lot of time with her during that period released some, images of screen caps of supposed messenger exchanges between her and Stormy where she denied ever having sex with Trump, that it was purely a business meeting. And she also put out a statement through her lawyer where she said it never happened, which she signed as Stormy Daniels rather than Stephanie Clifford, which is her real name. But it seems like she's kind of danced around the issue a little bit to a certain extent. And, you know, she's just basically exploited this to make some money. And, you know, so I don't know. I don't know what happened, but it's not going to change my opinion of Trump or change my support for him. And I think the people putting this out thought it was going to really hurt him with the evangelicals. And that's not going to happen because the evangelical voters did not vote for Trump because they thought he was a choir boy or because he thought that he was just like them. They voted for him, number one, because they felt like he was sympathetic to them and their community, which he is. He respects their lifestyle, even if he can't live it himself. And the other thing is that they made a determination that whatever his flaws, he was a far more moral person than either Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. And that's why they support him. And so stuff like this is not going to change that. It's not.
Yeah, I don't
see
how
it... I think it's a politicization of it. And I think it was they were trying to create a wedge between him and the evangelical community, and I don't think it worked. And so we'll see. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of rumors out there about different stuff, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, true. I'm with you on that one. One thing I'm not with is with that Pope. The damn Pope. What's with the Vatican? It seems like every day there's a new story coming out now. And there was another one, I think, just a couple hours ago.
Oh, really?
Another child pornography probe going on.
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, the Vatican has become, I think, totally corrupted at this point. And it's not good. And I mean, you know.
A diplomat at its embassy in Washington is suspected of possessing child pornography. I mean, does it really surprise you though?
Right. Well, the thing is that this is, excuse me, this is the kind of thing I'm talking about when I'm, excuse me, talking about disclosure, is that you're getting a lot of disclosure, on a lot of different stuff, and things are coming out and people are being arrested. They're just not, it's not Hillary or John McCain being perp walked off in chains in an orange jumpsuit,
We did get Anthony Weiner though, by the way.
I'm sorry, what?
I was just saying, we did get Anthony Weiner though.
Anthony Weiner, yeah. Well, Anthony kind of, Tony Weiner kind of, kind of made it impossible to ignore him. And, he was hard to ignore.
Well, with that name.
So, right, especially, yeah, Weiner. It should have been Anthony Small Weiner.
Your name is your destiny.
Yes, your name is your destiny. So anyway, we've had that arrest. I think that what we find out about the Vatican is going to be appalling to people when it all comes out. So.
Terrible.
You know. And I mean, this is not just one side of the aisle or the other, but it is predominantly more on one side than the other. I will say that in terms of how this comes down politically, but we need to stop. I think if we're going to survive this period without a civil war, we need to stop the whole left-right Democrat-Republican thing and just realize that there's good guys and bad guys. And up to this point, there have been far more bad guys than there have been good guys.
There's some insane people on both sides that get triggered if they find out you're a Republican or a Democrat.
Yeah.
They just go nuts, and then they won't even listen to a word you say.
I mean, it's funny because I'm trying to point out to people that, Trump is your best shot for disclosure, because the people that are against him are the people that have been keeping the secrets from us for 70 years. And just even that message, which I felt like was really neutral, just set people off. So, I don't know what I can do about it except try to just point facts out to people.
You mentioned the Civil War. It definitely seems like that's happening here in today's society. Everyone is completely divided. More so than ever. And
yes.
All these shootings, they don't help, especially like you were mentioning with the NRA. Do you carry a gun, Mike, at all? Do you even own a gun?
The first question I will not answer. The second question is yes. The answer is yes. I own more than one gun.
Same here.
And, I support anybody's right to do so. So
I'm with you on that. Any opinion on David Hogg and his battle with Laura Ingraham?
Well, you're just trying to drag me into the dirt here. Of course, I guess none of this is stuff I haven't tweeted about.
Well, this is fun discussion here with you.
Yeah. Look, he's a plant. I mean, his dad works for the FBI. He's a crisis actor in a sense that he was groomed for this. He's loves the camera. He's contradicted himself on whether he was even at the school or not when the shooting took place. He's a little twerp. And, I think Laura Ingraham made a huge mistake when she apologized for mocking his terrible, terrible college scores, college SAT scores and his GPA. But it looks like she's going to survive that. And, not that I think she's particularly worth watching or anything, but, it's very obvious this whole thing is a very orchestrated campaign to try to convince people to support the idea of taking away our guns. The fortunate thing is that the Constitution is a law that simply doesn't allow any government to take our guns away. I even think any gun control is, I don't want to be too libertarian, but any gun control is a violation of the Second Amendment. They shouldn't be able to restrict anything, guns or ammo or anything else. And So, you know, I think it's just an orchestrated attempt to try to sway public opinion, but, you know, fortunately we're protected by the fact that the Constitution exists and it says we can have guns. And you go beyond that. The important thing to understand is that our rights do not descend from government. They descend from God. And no government can overrule the word of God. So I think the distortion that's gone on here recently about, you know, what government has a right to do and not do are in our country is pretty outrageous, really.
It truly is. And one thing I did want to mention before I let you go here is human origin. Human origins, rather. I've always been curious what your stance was on that and where you think we came from, Mike.
Well, my stance is I would equate it to Lloyd Pye. So you remember Lloyd Pye? He wrote a great book called Everything You Know Is Wrong.
Right.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wonderful guy, passed away several years ago. So I'm into the intervention theory. And the other thing too is, like, we talk about human origins. The origin of what? The origin of the spirit or the origin of the body that you inhabit? I mean, really, this is just a body you inhabit. Frankly, I wish mine had better gallbladder, but it doesn't. And I think that we are spliced together genetically between an alien race that came here a long time ago, maybe hundreds of thousands of years ago, who are quite similar to Sitchin's Anunnaki, except I don't believe they were physical giants like he talks about. And they spliced together their DNA with the DNA of the inhabitants, maybe Homo sapiens, Homo erectus, I don't know, maybe Neanderthals, spliced them together and made us because they did need us here to help them out. And, you know, I mean, I don't think that makes us a slave race. I don't think they're coming back to claim their property. I don't think we're anybody's property. I think that we're, there's a big difference between a slave and a servant. And we may have been initially created, but now we have our own independence and we're going our own way. So that's what I think happened. I mean, I think that basically the Sitchin story is basically correct. And that's what I wrote about in my last book, which was 2 books ago, Ancient Aliens and Secret Societies. I talked about that a lot.
Very nice. Very nice. And of course, you will be attending Contact in the Desert very shortly, correct?
Contact in the Desert is in June. I actually have a bunch of things coming out. Well, first of all, I've got a new novel out called Lightbringer, which I just put out, which is sort of an X-Files meets the Da Vinci Code thing. And if you want to go with that, it's only $7.99 for the paperback and I think $2.99 for the Kindle on Amazon.com. So go pick that up. It's a very entertaining read, I promise you. I've got, you know, Hidden Agenda was my most recent book about the secret space program. And I've got this new book, Ancient Aliens and JFK, coming out probably by May 1st. So it'll probably be in the next 3 weeks. I've got to finish it this week and get it to the publisher. And then, I've got the New Living Expo at the end of the month in San Mateo, California, which will be a really great event there. It's always wonderful to do that. I have the Alien Con coming up in May, which is the Ancient Aliens thing. I'm happy to be invited to that. That'll be spectacular. And then the Contact in the Desert, and then which is in our first weekend in June. And then I'm off to Manchester, England, the home of my beloved Manchester City Football Club, and to do Awakening Manchester with Eric Von Daniken and David Icke and Nick Pope. I like to say Nick's name that way. Nick Pope and a bunch of other people. So that ought to be just an amazing, wonderful experience. It's going to be a great summer, and I'm looking forward to all that stuff. And please come see me and chat me up at any of these events. So you've got San Mateo, Pasadena, Palm Springs, and Manchester coming up.
You're a busy man.
Oh, and I forgot. I'm sorry. Sedona MUFON is also in May. I'm doing MUFON Sedona in May in Sedona, Arizona. Greatly looking forward to that one.
My God, Mike, you're one busy man.
Well, I've been spending the first 3 months of the year writing the books, and now I'm ready to get out and talk about it. I'm looking forward to it.
Very cool. Well, I do want to thank you very much for being a part of the program. Always fun to have you here. Always fun to talk to you. Anytime I've ever talked to you, I was in a good mood, and I'm continuing that.
Well, I'm usually drunk, so that's probably why.
Well,
I'm pretty entertaining when I'm drunk.
You're a good guy, Mike. Loved having you here. We're going to have to do a part two of this when you return from all your travels.
Okay, Michael. Thank you very much for having me on. Talk to you soon.
Oh, by the way, go ahead and plug your website before you go.
Oh, it's mikeberra.blogspot.com. You can catch me on Facebook. You can catch me on Twitter, on mikeberra33. I tend to be a little more political on Twitter and Facebook than I should be. I'm trying to wean myself off of that. But it's out there. And then, my Instagram is, also mikeberra33. And it's just, I try to keep that just personal. If you're interested in what it's like to be, me.
Very cool.
Whoever I am. Thanks, Michael.
All right, Mike. Take care. Good night.
Thank you. Night.
Bye bye. And there he goes, ladies and gentlemen. That was Mr. Mike Berra. And when I return, Mike Hideous will be joining me here live. Stay tuned, folks. Don't go anywhere.
Mike in Montclair. What's up, Mike?
Governor, next time you want to sit on a beach that is closed to the entire world except you,
yeah,
you put your fat ass in a car and go to one that's open to all your constituents.
Well, you know.
Not just you and yours.
Interesting, Mike. You know what?
What's that, Gov?
You know, Mike, I love getting calls from communists in Montclair.
Communists in Montclair.
You know,
you're a bully, Governor, I don't like bullies.
You know what? And listen, I'm not the one who came on the air. Hey, hold on, Mike. Mike, I'm not the guy who came on the air, swore on the air.
Who swore?
And so you did.
I got to get the heck out of here. You know,
you're swearing on the air, Mike. You're a bum.
And welcome back to the program. Hello out there. Often imitated, never duplicated. So nice to see so many of you out there still locked in. Thanks for being here with me tonight. I believe my second guest is ready. Let's bring him in. None other than Mr. Mike Hideous. Mike, how are you?
Hey there, Michael. Can you hear me all right?
Loud and clear.
All right. I'm here, brother.
I'm so glad you could be here, my friend.
Well, I just want to say thank you. As always, it's always a blast to be on your show, and I always really appreciate your letting me share the internet airwaves with you. Thank you, Michael.
No worries. It's been some time since we've last talked, so I'm glad we could finally do this yet again, and excuse me why I opened this beer.
Yeah, I think the last time we spoke was when we did a Getting Drunk on the Air episode.
I'm doing that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for those out there that are new in attendance, let me take a moment to reintroduce myself to you now. My name is Michael. I am the host and producer of this very unique program. Never forget that this is a call-in show. Please feel free to call in if your heart desires. That number is 760-332-8724. I'm here live with the one and only Mr. Mike Hideous.
Hello. That's me.
One more time, 760-332-8724. Don't be afraid. Call in if you dare. Now, Mike, how you been, man? I haven't talked to you in a while. Is everything going well for you, my friend?
Yeah. One of the big pieces of news that I have, for Empire Hideous fans, if there's anybody out there, is that I released a new effort on January 1st, actually the New Year's Day. I released a project that I did 20 years ago. It was, released on January 1st this year, 2018, 20 years ago to the day. It was recorded in 1998. It was recorded live, a live recording session for another album that I had put out with Empire Hideous back around the same time, right after that whole Misfits thing went down, so the album was called Victim Destroys Assailant. And the songs that were featured on that album were all from the recording session that we did 20 years ago on New Year's Day, 1998. And we did about 25 songs that day. And out of 25 songs, we only picked, I think it was 10, to be on the Victim Destroys Assailant album. The rest were never released because they just never fit anything we had coming out. So I decided to release a certain portion of songs. I picked 14 songs to be featured on this this new downloadable album only. It is entitled The January Sessions 1998. And it is available exclusively at MikeHideous.com. It's all downloadable. It's not a physical CD. The last physical CD I released was actually in 2000, I think it was 2010, called The Time Has Come, which was a studio album. But I've released two others after that. And so, yeah, they said it couldn't be done, but here it is.
And that was a great last CD, by the way.
Thank you very much.
The Time Has Come. Really do love that. And these newer tracks are really good, by the way. But, you know, I have a favorite, of course. That's track 14, God and I. That's my favorite song on there.
You know, and thank you very much. That was mine too. The version that's on there is one of two versions that were recorded that day. The other version ended up on the album, Victim Destroys Assailant. And, you can hear the way the January Sessions was released, it's released in its raw form. And there's nothing, I mean, we played live that day in the studio. We were there for, oh my God, 12 hours maybe. and we recorded 25 songs, in some cases repeating the same song over and over again until we got it right. So everything was done live, and the difference between like what you hear when you listen to the song God and I from the other album,
right,
Victim Destroys Assailant, it's slightly more produced. You know, we had a little bit more lean way to work with and everything, but this particular album, I basically just found the DAT tape that we recorded all the original music on, and it was in my musical archives, and I just pulled it out. I had a friend of mine from Washington State actually transpose it from DAT to a digital format, and then I got to listen to all the songs. I picked out what was going to be played, or I should say placed on the album, and that's how we got what we got. But you can hear the difference. It's definitely more raw sounding, very, very naked, if you will.
Yeah, you have a number of great songs on there.
Thank you very much. It's 20 years in the making.
And how did that come about? You just randomly found this around your house somewhere?
Yeah, basically, I keep a lot of my master recordings. Even demos, I keep everything, you know, everything that I've done with the band. And, I have a couple of like these big plastic totes. They have everything from like reel to reel tapes to cassette tapes to DATs to CDs, videos. I mean, all kinds of stuff. So looking through it, I found the DAT and I was like, oh geez, it's been a long time since I've listened to this. Like, I can't believe it's like 20 years ago. It's unbelievable. So, I mean, how time flies. Time has come and the time has flown, and only time will tell, because it's just a matter of time.
Oh yes.
So, but yeah, it's been 20 years, man. I can't believe it's been that long, and it's out now, and that's it. I don't know what more to say about that.
Yes, and before we get into anything else, can you go ahead and tell us just a little bit about yourself, Mike, for those who are new listening here, since there are new ears always tuning in nowadays?
Sure, I feel like, I'm not actually quite used to the process of having to do that with when I come on this show. So I'm actually, I got it all figured out here. Yeah, Mike Hideous, I was in a band called, I was in a couple bands. My first band was a band I created called The Empire Hideous, a very dark, heavy gothic rock type band. And then I did that for about 10 years. Then I hooked up with, the Misfits. I sang for the Misfits on tour in all of Europe and South America. That was a short period of time, though. That was only about 5 months. And then after that, I came back to America. I did a band called Spy Society 99, and that was more of a upbeat punk rock kind of band, and I did that until, for about 2 years, 3 years, and then I revived Empire Hideous again. In between that time, but actually before I started up Empire Hideous again, I also sang on, for another band, a side project called, the Bronx Casket Company with, Dee Dee Verney from Overkill. So there's been about four bands that I've sang for, And but mostly my band was Empire Hideous. That's me and Spy Society.
Heaven Raining Bullets is also another favorite of mine.
Yes, that's that was actually one of our, I hate to say the like word, for lack of a better term, one of our hits. That and another song, 2 Minutes to Midnight, which was both, they were both featured on an album called Say Your Prayers. That came out in 2002 or 3, I think.
And I've always wondered, were you going through anything when you wrote the song God and I?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, whenever I write material, particularly lyrically, there's always a source of inspiration that comes from the writing. And then I've always had an ability to allow the listener to interpret that as their own, in their own way. So yeah, when I wrote God and I was having, some people think it's a struggle between like spirituality, and other people think other people have even said, is this song about S&M?
Oh, I didn't think that when I heard it.
There are some lyrics that mention, like torture and
right. Yeah.
So, you know,
I can see that.
It's how you take it. When you read the lyrics, it's how you interpret them. But every song I write has an inspiration from the beginning. And as I said, and then I change it around a bit so that it fits a more generalistic, type of, understanding or meaning for the listener.
Yeah, I could only imagine back in that time for you. Those were good times, right, Mike?
Yeah, they were for me.
Times for you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 1994 to 1998, Empire Hideous was it was really doing good in all aspects of the word. And we got a lot of recognition. Like we were doing shows in New York as an unsigned band, you know, with no record label or any financial backing. We were doing shows to 1,000 people and sold out gigs. I mean, that was pretty good. And it all happened from 94 to 98. And then things, you know, as usual in many bands, they just sort of dissipate or fade away or break apart. And that's exactly what happened. And things started to go haywire. A tour, when you're not doing it professionally, like on a tour bus, a tour in a van and a car can really separate the boys from the men, so to speak. It really can become stressful. People can, you know, and eventually you really learn who it is you're with on tour. And I think the last tour that Empire Hideous did in 1997 97. It was very stressful for a lot of the people involved, and we had, you know, very little money. In fact, we had no money. We were just getting guarantees from the shows that we were doing and from the nice people that were kind enough to book us. It creates a lot of stress, and then therefore that created a lot of issues between people. And by the time we got back, you know, one person was leaving.
Yeah. That shit must be hard, Mike. The road, having to deal with someone next to you there that you may or may not like after the tour's over.
Yeah. We did a show back in 1990, I believe it was 93. We did a West Coast, California tour.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We did.
You're out here.
We were one of the first bands involved with three other bands to do the first American Goth Fest. It was dubbed the Pilgrimage Tour. And it included the following bands.
DK?
What's that?
DK?
No. It involved, Disascension, The Shroud, and The Prophetess.
Ah.
And these were all in California bands. And, originally we were trying to get London After Midnight to be a part of it too, which was a really big band, in the goth scene on the West Coast. but they never did it. So in any event, we were involved in that with those four other bands. We were the first four bands to do the first American Goth Fest in America. And, after that, like, our reputation began to grow. And, my point was, after we came back from that tour, our drummer split, like went into the studio, took his stuff and just left. Wow. We didn't even know it until
he just booked it.
Yeah. Right after the tour, we came back. No. Like we got off the plane. He got a ride home. We never heard from him again.
Just like that.
That was the end of that.
Wow.
Yeah. I was pissed, man. I was fucking pissed. But you know, so again, it all goes back to some people saying that I'm very difficult to work with, but I'm a perfectionist when it comes to getting my music played and performed the way I want it. So at the time, the drummer I had was a little, he didn't like me telling him what to do.
That's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, he just got fed up with me and left after we got back.
It's always the drummers though, I've noticed. I played in multiple bands and there's always issues with the goddamn drummer.
Yes.
I don't know why. Even at a small band like I was in, you know, we had all these invites to play in bars in San Diego, but we got held back because of the damn drummer.
Yep. I've lost more drummers and I've been in more situations because of drummers. I could just go on. But then, you know, then again, I always had a lot of trouble with keeping musicians in the band. One of the few musicians, the several few musicians that lasted as long as they did were, Jeff Austin, Mars, and Eve Lestrange. Jeff was a guitarist, Mars was a guitarist, and Eve was a bassist. And they stayed with me the longest. I believe they were with me for, Mars and Eve were with me from 1993 until 98, and Jeff joined up about 1994.
Yeah, for some people that's too long.
Yeah, yeah.
You know how it goes with musicians.
Even when we came back in the new millennium, in 2002 or 2003, I can't remember now, when we came back, Jeff reformed with us, like, you know, he joined the band again, and then he stayed until about 2005, and then he stepped out as well.
I see.
Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah. You had a pretty good run though.
Yeah, we did. We did. You know, the older I get and I look back at the way things were done a decade ago, in fact, over a decade ago, because I actually retired from music in 2008. So it was 10 years this past February that I threw in the towel. And, you know, I've seen things changed. They've just changed. It's not the same. The internet the internet was out and there, but when we started and, you know, in the late 80s and all through the 90s, we didn't really have we didn't have Facebook. We didn't have, you know,
Of course, right.
Yeah. We didn't have an availability to put our music online or sell it ourselves. You know, back then the whole idea was to find a record label to back you up. Now you got record labels closing left and right because of the internet.
But even bands like yours, Mike, those bands today would just not survive.
No, you know what I mean? We're not commercial.
But you know what I mean? It's just today music has changed dramatically. Rock bands, you know, there are no rock bands anymore.
And the ones that are out there.
I don't even consider those rock bands. Even though they're on that genre, alleged, that's rock. I don't even consider them rock.
Who are we talking about, Michael?
There was a band just recently on a station that I like that's in San Diego. I'm forgetting their name, but they're getting a little, you know, they're getting some attention and I'm thinking this band's awful. But now I had the name in my head and then it just drifted away.
Well,
I'll think about it. Don't worry.
There are plenty of rock bands out there. Like you still have the great bands, you know, the big bands that are still out there. But I believe a lot of the new genre that is coming out is this cross between like rock and hip hop and rap. And I don't know. I just can't get into it.
I think country's done that too. When I listen to certain talk shows on AM every now and then, I'll listen to they'll have like some sort of bumper music and it's some country song and it sounds like a rap song in a way.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck is this?
I hear it too. And, it's
like, what is this?
You know, there's a few bands that are coming out here and there, like from the underground, but very few of them have drummers these days. It's all beatbox material. And very little of it is musically inclined. And by that, I mean, it's all synthesizer, you know, it's all programmed, looped.
I'm not a big fan of that either. The electronic music, I just don't dig it.
I can appreciate some of it. Like, believe it or not, I actually can get into some techno and some electronic stuff, but.
Well, I mean, that's been around forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can understand that, but it's not really my cup of tea. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, it's not my, I can only listen to it for a certain period of time, and then after that I gotta listen to like actual instruments.
If only you're on acid, right, Mike? then it would help.
But, you know, listening to like, you know, it reminds me of when I was a teenager and I was into like hardcore punk. Like I could only listen to that like maybe 5 hours a day. And then after a while I used to have to put on like a classical album.
I never understood some of my friends that I had that just listened to nothing but punk rock. I'd be like, it gets kind of old after a while, don't you think? I would tell them that. And later on in life, they, you know, they changed and they understood what I meant. And speaking of which, one of those people that I'm thinking about, I wasn't even going to talk about this with you, Mike, but I might as well. I was in a band with this friend of mine, and you know, he was the singer of the band and, you know, loved punk music and everything was good. I figured that's all he would ever listen to. And nowadays, he thinks he's like a rapper now. I'm not even kidding you. He even has like a tattoo on his face.
On his face.
I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this. I hope he doesn't get mad at me.
Yeah,
but
no,
it's true though.
I don't know. I could never do rap. I could never get into that. I listened. We had this conversation last.
Yeah, we did. But don't get me wrong. I like rap, but nothing of today is just nothing I really like.
It's just, it's so played out. It's in every commercial. It's in every movie. It's on every television. You know, it's just so played out. And the worst part about it is that you get these people who are involved in business and they use rap music as a ploy to try to get the quote unquote, the young people in to their product, whatever
right.
it is they're selling. You know,
that's when you know it's over, Mike, when you hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet it's still being pushed. It's still being pushed. It's like, oh yeah, you know, it's so underground. It's I don't know. I don't even care. I don't even like it. I don't even like it.
Yeah, that's how I feel about today's music and movies for the most part.
Yeah, some of the movies are getting.
It's been done. It's been done to death.
Mm-hmm.
You really are beating a dead horse at this time.
Indeed,
I can't even believe there's people that are still playing in bands, Mike. There's no money.
That?
There's no money in it.
Well, there never was any money in it. We never got any money. I mean, we got paid for gigs, but
just like what I'm doing right now, there's no money in this either.
There will be for you.
So you know what I mean? It's like, you're beating a dead horse here.
There will be for you, Michael. You'll see.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah, well, you got it, man.
I'm not seeing it though. I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, give it time. Just stick with your talent. Just keep doing what you're doing. You'll see.
Yes.
It'll come. Now listen, I gotta mention something.
Go ahead, go ahead.
I don't mean to get off subject.
It's all
but
good.
There is a friend of mine who is in a band called Hades Machine.
That's a great name.
Isn't it great?
That's a great name.
They are like a horror punk rock band from
cool.
Yeah, they're from Washington State. And he just released he's a good friend of mine, and he just released a new CD called Dead of Night. And on the CD, he contacted me way before about what I'm going to tell you. He released the CD, and on the CD, there is a cover song of a cover of an Empire Hideous song called Open Windows. And that's an Empire Hideous song. And he covered that. And I'll tell you, it sounds amazing. It sounds better than the version that I did.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I just wanted to say, if anybody wants to hear that, if any Hideous fans are out there, check out Hades Machine, Dead of Night. It's out now on CD, And, you know, you can go on Facebook and find it or on the internet. You can order a CD or t-shirts or even a pillow, with the, Hades machine logo and zombies on it. So.
Very nice.
Pick your copy up today. Speaking of which, if anybody's interested in getting an Empire Hideous merchandise, there are CDs, available on my website, including the last three, which were released, on CD, that is, Remixes Through Time, Spy Society 99 CD, which is a completely separate entity, as I said before, The Time Has Come. Those CDs are still available, as well as my book, which is still selling, online as well.
Yes, and by the way, I randomly watched the scene from American Nightmare.
Okay, which scene was that?
I think they were talking to, what's his face? Steel.
Bobby Steel?
Bobby Steel, right.
Yes. Yeah. It's, was that the one where he talks about puking on John Lennon?
I believe so.
Yeah, I've heard that 1,000 times.
Was that his, claim to fame?
Well, not exactly.
I feel like he told that story often.
Yeah, he did. But I'm bored of it because I've heard it so many times on the film. So I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Bobby and all, but,
I hear you.
I get tired of hearing the story because I've seen the film so many times. But, Bobby in the day, back in the 70s when he was in the Misfits, Bobby knew a lot of people. In fact, the day the Misfits kicked him out, he was with Frank Zappa, who he had brought to see the Misfits play at the Ritz.
God, that's so random.
Yeah, at the Ritz in New York City. I think it was 1979 or 78.
Wow.
Yeah, something like that. And so he knew a lot of people. He was like the guy who stood out in the punk rock scene who then joined up with the Misfits. I mean, you know, he was the guy back then. He's still going at it too, you know. Good for him.
Speaking of punk rock, Jello, his representative hasn't gone back to me yet.
Oh.
I did hear from them once though. So it might go down still. You never know.
I would imagine if you keep persisting on it, like if you stay persistent, you'll get him. He's a decent guy. I mean, he's just busy, you know. He's like on television and
he's doing his thing.
Did you see him on Portlandia?
I sure did, actually. Speaking of which, aren't they on their last season or is it over already? I thought there was a new one that just came out.
I know there's a new one that came out. I haven't seen all the episodes, but I got turned on to the first I don't know, seasons or episodes, whatever, and I absolutely loved watching that show. It was so funny.
It's a good show, actually.
It is. What's the guy's name?
Even Danzig's on there.
Yeah, I saw Glenn Danzig on it too. That was hilarious. Every time I think of it, it's like, in order to stay cool, sometimes you must look like a dork or a geek, whatever he says.
That's the last person I ever imagined to be on there.
Yeah, you would think he would be too serious, but it's good to know he's got a sense of humor.
Yeah. That's a guy who I would love to drink with.
Who, Glenn or the guy in Portland?
Well, both, but I mean, Glenn would be hilarious.
You think?
I think I could get him to laugh.
He seems to have a good sense of humor.
Yeah. Dark. I was going to say he has a dark sense of humor, I bet you.
What's the guy obviously. Who's on Portlandia? What's his name?
The main guy?
Yeah.
God, what's that dude's name?
Oh, he's so funny. I think he must have been a musician or something in a band because like he knows so much about the underground scene and they're always, you know, portraying parts that
his name's like Fred, I think it is.
Fred, that's right. That's right. Fred something. And they're always doing parts like punk rockers, like beggars, like squatters on the street asking for money.
Do you recall seeing those kids around when you were in the New York scene, a bunch of squatters?
Absolutely. Clubs? Absolutely.
They're,
in fact,
they were everywhere, right?
I got a story to tell you. One time I was on Avenue A in New York City with my friend Mark. And, it's a beautiful Saturday afternoon. And, you know, in the summertime, things were really, it was a great time. You always had a lot of people out. This was before 9/11. and things were just really nice. And I'm walking down the street, and I'm with Mark, and we walked past this one, like, we weren't far from St. Mark's Place, and as I walked past, I saw a couple of punk rock squatters, and one guy puts his hand up. He's like, "Hey, man, you got a dollar for a beer?" Now, don't get me wrong. Every time I have ever been in New York City, at least back then, anytime I saw a squatter and they asked me for money, I always gave them money, whether it was a dollar, a quarter, or whatever I had, change, I always did. That day, I was really low on cash, and it's not like I looked like some guy who was like, you know, this better than thou kind of person. I looked the part, you know. I was wearing my black clothes and my hat, and, you know, I was part of the scene, if you will. And this guy, he looks like, I looked at him after he asks me for a dollar for a beer, and I'm like, "No, I'm sorry, man." And he goes, "Oh, what's it going to do, break your wallet?" I'm like, "Go back to New Jersey, you idiot."
I have two funny stories to tell you about the homeless. But before I do, Mike, I need to run to the fridge really fast.
All right.
Do you mind saying a few things here?
Yeah, you want me to say something? What do you want me to talk? Give me a subject first.
Anything you want. Freedom of speech. Speaking of which,
help me out.
You're still featured on the show's intro here on the program when you are mentioning how they're taking away our freedom of speech.
In the opening segment?
Yeah.
Yes.
I truly believe they are, and I know you know they are. Speak on that for a second. Well, everyone, really, even this program I do here, in regards to YouTube, they sometimes just flag, this program every now and then, randomly. Yeah, just randomly, it seems. Even on subjects that I think they wouldn't even find any interest in.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I'll explain that in a second. I'm going to run really quick.
Go ahead.
I'll be right back.
I'm going to talk a little bit.
Go ahead.
Basically, when I first started my band Empire Hideous, it was about opening doors and going into places to expose things for what they are. And a lot of my material that I wrote was either political or religiously involved in that subject matter. And I always tried to, you know, blow the doors off of the things that were taboo or hidden from the public. So that's where sort of like the name even came from, Empire Hideous. And it began to morph into something that became...
Now I'm back. Go ahead.
It morphed into something that became almost a quest to try to expose things for what they are, politically, religiously, personally, opening up the truth about love and hate and all of that. Just that's what the band was about. So to find out that there are still censorship going on, I mean, there's always going to be censorship going on. In my personal opinion, I mean, it's been happening recently. You know what's going on here? You got Big Brother watching you. Google.
Oh yeah.
Facebook, Amazon, what else?
YouTube. eBay,
or YouTube. All these companies, when you open up your computer, there is a signal going directly to these companies that we don't even realize. And it's letting them know what we watch. And then they build up a statistic based on what you've watched, what you've spoken about, what you're looking for, what you're searching for, what you've bought. And there's this new thing out. Google just put out the, what the hell is it called? Is it Alexandria? No, it's.
Oh, Alexa.
Alexa. Yeah, but that's right. That's not Google. I think, Google's got this thing where you, it's a device. You put it in your house and it listens all the time. And when
that's what it is.
Yeah, you say, "Hey Google," and it answers. And it says, you know, you say, "Hey Google, what time is it?" And it gives you the time. Or, "Hey Google, find this song." I mean, if that's not Big Brother, I don't know what is. I mean, that you've got a device in your home.
That's also your cell phone too.
That's on all the time.
Yeah.
And they can, I mean, if they wanted to, they can hear you. As a matter of fact, I might have even talked to you about this. Samsung had a television that was able to like listen or something to that effect, where they were able to listen in or get the information of what you were watching sent back to the headquarters of whoever commercially involved they were with. And I found that astounding. Like, how was that even legal?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And even going back to the late 90s, early 2000s, I was really into messing with computers, and I had learned to mess with something called Trojan viruses. I won't get too deep into that, but I explored with that, and I was able to do some really interesting things. Things that I thought at the time were pretty incredible. Just like listening into people's, if they had a microphone, you could listen in, or a webcam, you could turn it on yourself, remotely.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and this was stuff that I was able to do back in the late 90s.
Were you a hacker?
Well, I guess I would go with that title, but I wasn't really trying to do any of that sort of stuff, but I did. I'm not going to lie about that sort of thing, but I experimented with that sort of thing way back in the day.
And
I stopped. Hey, I believe me. I stopped because I got scared after a while. But yeah, I was always really fascinated with some of the things that I could do. And then fast forward through time, finding out what actual government agencies can do. Now that's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And it increases by the day with the, you know, constant upgrading of electronics and electronic devices. Like, I know when I get programs on my phone, there are actually, you actually have to turn the microphone off in some cases because it actually listens to what it is you're doing or saying. And I can't appreciate that at all. That's just Big Brother. That, you know, that's an invasion of my privacy, and I don't go for that one bit.
Even on my phone, when I send the message and use voice to text, even when the volume is all the way down, it still records what I'm saying. That should give everyone a hint. You know what I mean?
I know that.
You know what I mean? Even though the volume is down, it still hears you.
That's crazy.
Isn't that interesting?
You know, there's a lot of great things that are in electronics these days.
Oh, I fucking love it. You know, I'm addicted to.
I do too.
I'm addicted to all this stuff, all this shit, you know?
Do you have the iPad, the iPhone?
Yeah, I have iPod. All that. I have all that stuff, even though I hate Apple.
Really?
I have an Android phone, actually. And I'll tell you why. As soon as Apple, as soon as they hijacked my phone and started putting in, that shitty band U2, once they uploaded their album on my phone, I knew it was too much.
Now,
they crossed the line. They crossed the line, Mike.
Hang on. Now you said they uploaded that band to your phone. How and why? Be specific.
I don't know. I don't exactly know how they did it, but they were able to just one day out of the blue, their entire album was on my phone and on everyone else's phone too. Their new album.
So it's obviously what you've got here is a business deal between the band
Correct.
The record label and Android Apple?
Apple. It was through iTunes.
Yeah. So basically this is what all the top notch bands do. They're all connect. That's how they're making money these days. Not making money through record sales. They make money through selling themselves. Like
correct.
Stores.
Yeah. Because I was going to say there's like no money selling CDs anymore.
No, there never
was. It's over.
You know, like even in the day when you did make money, royalties on CD or album sales, you made about 5 cents, which means you had to sell about 10 million copies in order to make like, you know, $100,000. There was no money in record sales. It was very, very little. The money was made in touring, other types of merchandise.
Right.
That you may have had like, you know, a contract on where you got a certain percentage. But anyway, everything's changed now because now the big bands are, they even sell their portions of their songs, like a rhythm or a guitar riff that is sold, for GarageBand, which allows you to loop certain things to make your own songs. So you get a guitar riff from, say, Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin.
Or Kiss.
Or Kiss, whatever.
Right.
And then you get a drum beat from, say, oh, I don't know, let's just say for argument's sake, Neil Peart from Rush. And then you get a flute sound from, like, Carlos Takei, you know, this Indian guy who plays flute. And then you can just make your own songs by looping all this stuff that other people have sold to GarageBand through Apple. That's how they make money.
Yeah, because every other way is just gone. I'm sure you
for the
still,
most part.
I'm sure you still remember 1999 when Napster first came out.
I certainly do. I was pissed because they had my stuff on too.
I'm sure you were pissed.
Yeah. And you know, it's not for nothing. I don't think a big band should even worry about something like that. But a small band like myself, you know, like obviously we weren't big as big as Metallica, but a small band like myself, I put those records out on my own with my own money. So for it to be available on Napster and being sold for a profit, and I don't see a goddamn cent, really pissed me off. Cause that's, I worked hard to make those CDs. So.
Oh yeah.
It's a very unfair, for an independent band to have it. Like right now, my music, every once in a while I'll come across a website that is selling my CDs or downloads of my music. And I'm not making a dime. I'm not making anything.
That's not good.
No, it's not. I, you know, sometimes the old record label that I was involved with, they say that, oh, well, we sold them the rights to sell the downloads. Because apparently when I signed the contract for the record label that I was on last, I signed away, I think it was 50% of my publishing. And
yeah, you gave away your rights.
It's fucking stupid. You know, it's amazing how I give away my rights when none of those people were in the room when I wrote those songs. Or when I put the money down to record the CDs.
It's like marriage.
Yes.
You like that? good times.
Yeah. Indeed.
My goodness, yes. Yep. I just, goddamn, I just get so sad when I'm thinking about all these musicians who are just trying their best to get noticed by labels, and it's just, you're really beating a dead horse at this point.
Oh yeah, don't even
try. If that's your dream, just fucking give it up.
That's right. Well, no. Did you say give it up? No.
I would say give it up at this point.
No.
You don't think so?
No, I'll tell you.
You don't think music has just completely been an abomination?
No. There are still independent bands out there.
Still good, you think?
Absolutely, and they're working their asses off. My advice to them is never go out of your way to try to get a record label to sign you. If they want you, they'll come to you. Don't waste your money sending press kits to this label, that label, and the other thing. Just go out there and bust your ass with what you love doing. And if that's music, then go out there, play a lot of shows, become noticed, build a following, go on tour. Going on tour is the best way.
The road.
Absolutely. The road. You gotta just like put everything aside. You've gotta have no attachments to home, and you've gotta just jump out on the road. And once you start doing it the first or second time, the third time comes easier. The fourth time comes even easier than that. And before you know it, you've got people calling you. So yeah, never, if you're a new band, don't ever waste your money sending press kits to a record label. It's useless. And in fact, I don't think many people do it these days anyway, because they're online, you know, hawking their shit online. So yeah, I don't think record labels even exist anymore.
I just don't see how that is a viable option nowadays.
It's not.
The whole record label thing.
There's only three major record labels left. I think it's Warner Brothers, Sony, and Capitol, or I could be wrong. I don't remember. Or Columbia. I don't remember. And they used to have smaller subsidiary labels, you know, like Roadrunner was an affiliation of Warner Brothers, I believe.
Whatever happened to that label?
I honestly don't know.
They were like popular in the mid 2000s and then they just fell off.
And the 90s and the 80s.
Yeah, that too.
Yep. But, you know, the thing is, what I was saying is that there's only like three major labels left, and all the smaller labels are gone. All the labels that signed bands like Typo Negative and the Deftones, and,
right?
They're all falling away. They're falling away, and the only ones that are going to be left are the big giants. And the big giants are going to be putting out bands that the mainstream likes, all the shit you hear on mainstream radio, top 40 crap, like, what's his fucking name? Wayne Conway or whatever the fuck his name is, that fucking asshole. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't actually.
Oh, Conway something. The guy Conway. Who says, I'm a genius. I'm a genius, yo.
I'm looking at the top 100 Billboard list right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta be honest with you, I don't think I've heard any of these songs.
Me neither.
I've been only listening to like AM. So
it's all shit, Mike.
I don't listen to any of this.
Yeah, I can't stand it either. It gets worse and worse by the day, and it's all pumped into our heads from the radio,
And when I do listen to the radio, it's just one radio station in San Diego that plays, you know, they play old music and new music. And then I hear this, one band and I just think, God, this shit's awful.
Yeah, I hear you. But it's the record, you know, it was always the radio stations that used to jam it down your throat. Oh, you're going to love this. Listen to this. Like it. And they would play it over and over and over and over and over.
And by the way, Mike, there is a caller on the other line here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, let's take that call. Caller, you are live on the air. What's going on?
Hey, Mike, it's a pleasure to talk with you, man.
Hey, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey, how big of a douchebag asshole is Mike Ness? I heard some pretty badass stories, man. Just a lame asshole.
You know, I'm so glad you called in because you did. You just reminded me of a bunch of stories that one of my uncles used to tell me. I had this one uncle who grew up in a very Jehovah Witness orientated family. One of my uncles out in L.A. And my goodness. He was into the scene and he was able to see Mike Ness. And I think he even interacted with him. And just like you said right now, complete asshole.
Really? Just, I like Mike.
Just a complete dick. Maybe he was just in one of his moods. I don't know. But it's not the first time I heard someone say that about Mike Ness.
Wow. I never heard that, but.
Yeah, it's true.
Who's the caller? Mike is his name? What's his name?
Oh, no. Caller, what was your name, my friend?
This is Chris.
Oh, yeah. This is Chris.
Chris, this is Mike Hideous. I wanted to ask you, where did you hear this from?
Well, this goes back a few years ago because I had a good friend of mine who actually knew a couple of people in the band, and they said that this guy was just a complete douchebag, man. And he's always been just to regular people, you know, just being a douchebag backstage and everything.
That's what I heard.
Hey, man, I just wanted to tell you the greatest concert I went to, and I know I'm really aging myself here, but Day on the Green in Oakland, California. 1985, man. The closing band was the Scorpions, and they had Y&T and Rat and Metallica, and Cliff Burton was still playing, man. Greatest concert ever, Day on the Green. Thanks, Mike, man. You're great, man. Love you.
Wow. By the way, did you hang out in the parking lot there?
A lot of weed smoking, in the Bay Area at that time. Day on the Green had some of the greatest concerts, man. Oakland, California, the Oakland Coliseum, where A's play right now. Some of the greatest, Mike.
Nice.
Mike, I love you, baby. I love you. And I love you. I love everybody. Man. This is great. Great show.
Goodness.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, Chris.
I love you,
Chris,
baby.
Chris. Don't go anywhere. I gotta tell you something. You got a minute?
Yeah. Okay.
Listen to this. I gotta tell you something. You know, you bring this thing up about Mike Ness and everything. And I just wanted to tell you a little story. I'm a fan of the Monkees. Okay. You know who they are, right?
Yeah.
Chris?
Yeah.
Okay. I went to go see them. Oh gosh. It must have been about 2 years ago, maybe. And, I was a child. I was a young man, a young boy when I heard the Monkees. So I've seen them play twice already. And, this one time they were playing at this horror convention in New Jersey. And just before
Were they actually playing the instruments themselves or?
No. What I'm trying to tell you is that how people are assholes. So before they went on, I saw Peter Tork and I saw Mickey, whatever his last name is,
Owens or
whatever. So I wanted to walk up to them because I'm such a fan. I've been a fan since I was about 8 years old. And, I go to walk up to Peter Tork, and as I walk up to him, his bodyguard steps right in front of me. And Peter Tork literally turns around, turns his back to me, and the bodyguard gets in front. He's like, "Yeah, you don't want to bother him right now." I'm like, "Oh, okay." I just wanted to shake his hand and just say, I really respect him. So when that didn't happen, I walked away and I saw Mickey coming out of the men's room. And as Mickey was coming out of the men's room, I was like, Hey Mickey. And he just kept walking. He didn't turn around. He didn't look at me. He didn't stop. Nothing. Just kept walking. And I'm standing there like a total tool, waving like, Hey Mickey, I really like your stuff. And he's just walking away from me. What I'm getting at is this. Sometimes these musicians and actors and anybody in show business, sometimes they have such an attitude, but it's what makes them who they are. For example, it's been in history. I mean, Beethoven. Look at Beethoven. Beethoven was an asshole to people, but he was a genius at music. And it happens a lot with a lot of different musicians and actors, as I said. So Mike Ness might be what you're saying. I can't speak for something I don't know about, but it also might be what makes him who he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
You agree or no?
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I just know that the guy was a douchebag. That's all, you know. And I heard a lot of stories, but, hey, do you guys remember LA at the, Mike, help me out here. Band that, I know you saw a lot in El Centro, probably down there a lot during your days when you're hanging down in the clubs down there. the Roxy.
The clubs.
Remember that time when you were hanging down there? But anyways, I'll think of the name later. But anyways, thanks, Mike, man. It was really, really a pleasure to speak to you. It's an honor. I really love musicians, and you have a lot of talent, man. And I just want to say thank you.
Which Mike are you thanking?
Both of you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Really appreciate you hanging out here with us, man.
Party on, man.
All right. Take care, my friend.
Take care, Chris.
And there goes Chris, a listener of the program. Great guy, saying that Mike Ness is an asshole.
I thought he was going to say me. How come that guy Mike Hideous is an asshole?
He's all, Mike Hideous is a piece of shit. I hate Mike Hideous. I hate him. He's a terrible man.
The first time.
have you had people say that to you on stage?
Well, not on stage, but I.
What's the worst thing anyone's ever called you on stage?
Not on stage. Nothing's ever happened on stage. When I'm on stage, I'm kind of like...
No one's ever heckled you pretty good there?
Oh, I've been heckled, yeah. But, you know, the music's so loud that they usually can't be heard after that.
They get drowned out.
Yeah, but... I hear you. I mean, what was I going to say? I've gotten hate mail. I've gotten plenty of hate mail from people who don't like me. But, you know, what am I going to do? I've said it 1,000 times. You can't please everybody.
You really can. And Mike, I did want to get into one issue here with you. Not that I have an issue with you, but just one thing that's been going on, of course, is all these shootings that we're seeing here. We just had another shooting. This time it was a female.
At the YouTube thing, yeah.
At the YouTube thing. Apparently, I guess her channel had been censored to some extent. And Mike, my channel on YouTube, it goes through those sort of things. Some episodes get demonetized. I know how that is. It's not my, I don't own the platform. I know if I say something they deem inappropriate, they have the right to do whatever they want because it is their platform.
Right.
However, this woman who I was joking earlier on the program that she looks like Sarah Silverman.
Okay.
And she got really angry. Apparently that's what they were doing to her channel. So she went crazy and shut up the place.
Really?
Yeah, out here in California.
You think it was
San Bruno, California?
See, I didn't hear much about it. I don't know many details about that shooting. Not to jump the subject, but you got to talk to me about this. Did you hear anything else about that Las Vegas shooting?
Well, I've heard so many things about the Las Vegas shooting.
The funny thing is like it just.
Where do I begin?
But here's where you can help me out, because I know you read into a lot of the conspiracy theories. Why did it disappear after just 2 weeks?
Well, it's funny you say that, because on that program, on my program, when that incident happened, I said on the show, as soon as this program is over, a new disaster will take place, and that will be plastered all over your television screen as soon as this show's over. And it's true.
Well, there were so many other things too that didn't make sense. Like there were conflicting stories.
A lot of conflicting stories, right?
Yeah, and it just seems like such a conspiracy. I don't normally say that.
You really don't, actually. That's the first time I've actually heard you say that.
Yeah.
You're not really for
it. You know me. I'm really skeptical.
Very skeptical. Yeah.
But like I said, you heard about it intensely for just about 2 weeks, and then it went away. Nosedive.
Yeah, it went away.
And then you didn't hear about it anymore.
I'm not sure if you saw footage, but there's a new surveillance of the shooter, gambling and eating alone, and then filling his suit with, his suite with guns, apparently.
His what? His suit?
No, his hotel room basically had a suite there.
Oh, okay.
And I guess there's footage of him doing this, 7 days of a video of him doing this, going back into the room. Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you get a little bit suspicious?
You know,
after a while, like, wouldn't you think, well, why is he going in there so often with the new set of a new suitcase there?
Yeah, it seems odd, but then you got to think, Michael, if nothing's happening at the moment, where does privacy stop and surveillance begin?
Yeah, I just would suspect that somebody would kind of catch on and think, well, isn't that a little bit suspicious, though, that he keeps repeating this action?
All right, well now let's look at that woman who shut up the YouTube place. She was the day before.
She was fucking crazy, man. I'm not sure. Have you? Well, I don't think you have, but have you seen any of the videos she's uploaded?
I heard it.
Really odd.
Yeah, she was. But here's what I was going to say. The day before that shooting happened, she was, I think she was stopped at the shooting range or something by the police. She was stopped before going to the shooting range. Now they stopped her, but she didn't do anything wrong. Next day, she shoots up YouTube. So again, where does privacy stop and surveillance begin?
True. Even her father had notified the police about his daughter.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the father had mentioned something, if I recall correctly. Yeah, the dad said something. But I mean, the police can't actually go and arrest you if you're suspected of something, you know?
Right, if there's no hardcore evidence for them to really take you down.
They can't really do anything.
What can they do? Yeah, they can't do anything.
I don't think people understand that part. Because people usually say, well, there was a warning, there was this, but realistically, the police can't do shit, though.
That's the same situation with these sleeper cells that are in America of terrorists, of Muslim terrorists. They can't, don't ask me why, but they can't do anything, even though these guys are marked as terrorists from other countries living in America in sleeper cells.
Oh, and they know they're there, yet they don't do anything.
And they know they're there. They're in sleeper cells, and they're doing nothing. The FBI, the CIA, doing nothing to take these people down.
And they have their address. They have all these things on them, yet they don't do nothing.
That's right.
It's kind of odd, right?
It's very odd.
Really odd.
With what's going on in the world, you would think that they would keep these people out completely. Why bring them into the country and just wait for a tragedy?
It's almost as strange as Ben Affleck's tattoo on his back.
What does he have on his back?
He's got like a dragon of some sorts. It's really questionable, you know. I'm starting to question him, you know what I'm saying? I'm starting to really wonder.
Oh.
He's making me wonder, Mike.
Maybe he's from that movie, Cannibal Hannibal.
I don't even know. It's just it's one of the worst tattoos I've ever seen.
Oh, is it? I didn't know it was that bad.
It is awful, Mike. You gotta see this tattoo whenever you get a chance. Probably the worst tattoo I've ever seen. It's grotesque.
I'm not a Ben Affleck fan. That's why I don't know this sort of thing. Why do you know?
It just randomly came up on the internet here.
Oh, okay.
I looked at his tattoo and I just thought, oh God.
I thought you were a big fan.
Really, Mike?
No.
I'm a fan of Ben Affleck. That guy stinks.
Yeah. I don't know. Ben Affleck, that's just, I can't go there. Hey, by the way, I want to tell you, I really like your logo.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Is that relatively new?
It is actually rather new. Just a couple months. couple months old, and that was done by an illustrator in South Africa.
No kidding.
Very talented guy.
Wow. Does he listen to the show? Is that how you found him?
Yeah, he listens to the program.
That's beautiful. I really like it.
He's one talented guy. The guy could really draw anything, really.
I'll tell you, I gotta say, I think it's very professional looking, and I think it really adds to the program's professionalism.
It adds a bit of life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, no disrespect or anything. I just think it's way better than the last logo you had prior to this.
Same guy.
I'm not saying that that artwork was bad. I'm just saying I think this is more professional looking.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, I'm never mind. It's not the same guy. You're thinking of the other logo, the way older one. Yeah, that was done by a different character out in San Diego. And yeah, he's not exactly a professional.
Well, not that it was terribly bad. It's just a different form of art.
Yeah, it's a little different. I hear you.
Yeah, I dig this new one.
Yeah, this one's much more modern, much more professional.
That's a sticker right there. That's a round sticker.
Yeah, one guy got really mad at me, by the way. Another show host out there because of this logo. It looks a little bit like his.
Is that who I'm thinking of?
No. You won't even know this character here, but it's a logo that looks kind of like his, and he even sent me a message over Twitter, and I think I suspect that he believes that I had copied him, but it's like, you know, I never asked for this thing to be drawn. I never requested it. It just sort of was given to me, so I ran with it.
Well, you know, the what is that? The Illuminati eye?
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people, you know, they think they created everything.
Yeah.
You know how that goes, Mike.
I know.
We got silly cunts out there.
Yeah, don't even get me started.
Oh, yes. Well,
in any event, it's a great little logo. I'm happy you got it, a new art, piece for your show. And, it looks fabulous. I just wanted to finish up on that. Awesome.
Yeah, no problem, man. I'm glad you dig it. Speaking of which, did you see that there was a fire over at Trump Tower?
No, when was this?
I guess it leaves a man dead and 6 firefighters injured.
Where was this? New York City?
Yeah, I believe this just happened.
Trump Tower, which?
Apparently it just happened Saturday night or Saturday, I think, afternoon perhaps. I'm not exactly quite sure. But yeah, left one man dead and 6 firefighters injured.
Wow, I gotta say, I was completely void of any news today. So I was out and about. I went for lunch, did my laundry. I don't remember any of that stuff.
Yeah, don't worry.
Oh, good. I won't.
Don't worry. It's just one man that died.
Oh, okay.
I think everyone can give that a pass. Just one man died.
Oh, man.
You know how it goes. No one worries about that.
I'm not going there, Michael. I'm not going there.
I know. I like to say those terrible things, though.
Hey, whatever happened to last time I was on, there was a guy or somebody was bothering you that you said you were going to take care of business.
Oh, shit. That sounds just like me, too.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I did.
May I ask what happened?
Well, I can't really go into detail.
Okay.
But enough said. You know, things happen. Things need to be put into place and people need to be talked to. And, you know, that's part of the conundrum, but we get it done.
Well, I'm glad to hear everything got worked out. Yeah, I know you were pretty pissed off.
Yeah, everything gets squared away eventually.
Good.
I get angry enough.
Well, I won't bring it up anymore.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. It's just, you know, I just don't want to bring up old things that will incite others out there.
It's the way to be. Sometimes it's better to kind of step back. I remember you had that female DJ on. I can't remember her name. That DJ host that you had on, friend of yours. I don't remember her name. She was telling you the same thing. Calm down, Michael. Calm down.
Oh, yeah. I recall.
You know what I'm talking about?
I sure do.
Now, what was her name?
I think you're thinking of Amy, perhaps.
Yeah, the DJ, right? She's a.
Well, she has a talk show of her own.
A talk show. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, you're talking about Amy Martin.
That's right. Yeah, I gotta admit, I never got a chance to listen to her show.
Yeah, she's cool.
Yeah, it seems like she has a pretty good show though. I always meant to listen to it. It's just, I just never got around to it. I apologize.
Don't worry, it happens. I mean, I can't listen to everything I enjoy myself. Lots of people send me different programs out there they think that I'd like, and I'm probably sure I will, but I find it difficult every now and then to find the time to sit down and actually enjoy some of these programs.
Yeah.
There's too many.
There's so much out there. I mean, it's just, there's so much out there. You know?
There's too much.
You can't keep up. You can't. I mean, for every search engine you go on and you look for one thing, another 50 come up that are in the same genre of what you're looking for, and just keep going and going and going. It's nonstop. The internet is great. Don't get me wrong, but
it destroyed the music business, though.
It destroyed the music business. It's destroyed a lot of things.
The movie business as well.
And it just sucks you in. It pulls you in, and you get addicted to it, and you just never stop. I've limited myself. I don't go on now sometimes for days. I won't go on. I can't stand it anymore.
You can't stand it anymore.
No, if the only reason I go online, particularly Facebook, which I cannot stand it. The only reason I go on Facebook is to promote my music with Empire Hideous. And of course, whatever music I'm doing as myself. So the only reason I go on is to promote myself. Other than that, if you took it away from me, I would not care. I barely go onto my email accounts. All right. I can't be bothered anymore. I can't be bothered. It's such a hassle. And, you know, even on Facebook, you always got some asshole who's got to make a comment. You know, you suck, you know. Thanks for telling me.
You still get that, Mike?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Someone still goes in there and tries to troll you a little bit?
Oh, yeah. You know, especially on these misfit chat lines, there's always some prick. You know, it cracks me up. There's always some stupid fucking prick that's got to say something about me and my involvement in that band. But you know what? Here's the thing. Glenn fucking Danzig himself said, and I do quote, "I was one of the best singers in that band." And that's coming from Glenn fucking Danzig. So you know what? Anybody who's got something to say about what I did in that band when I sang for them, fuck you. Glenn said I was good. Okay? Fuck all you other guys. You got you've probably never even been in a band, so shut the fuck up.
That's a pretty big compliment there coming from Glenn, as he is known right. Not to really compliment anyone.
Let me tell you how that happened. When I was living in New Jersey, one night, this is in the early part of 2000 or 1999, I went into a club in New Jersey, and I met Steve Zing there, who is, as we know, the bass player for Danzig currently. He was also the drummer for Samhain with Danzig. So I see Steve and I'm talking to him, and he says, you know, because I want to tell you something, because Glenn and I were just talking the other day, and he said, I got to tell you, Glenn himself said that out of the whole, you know, whoever's actually sang for them since him, he said, you were the best. And like when I heard that, I was just like so flattered that Glenn Danzig said that about me. That's a true story. That is not a lie. You know, Glenn has always respected me, and I appreciate him for that. And
Mike, keep talking. I'm going to run again.
Okay.
One sec.
In any event, Glenn said that to me. So I don't really have to sit and worry about people who are going to criticize me and tell me that I didn't do a good job when Glenn himself, you know, stepped up and said, I did a good job. And that's what really mattered to me. You know, when you put your heart into something, your heart and your soul into something, and then you're criticized by people who have never even done what you've done, it's kind of insulting. Because, you know, I could see if Glenn had said, oh, well, Mike was a terrible singer and he did, you know, he was rotten, but he didn't. And that was his band. He formed that band. And as a result, you know, you get from the horse's mouth telling you that you've done the right thing and you did it. What you did was worthy. Whereas you got these other little pinhead pea brains that go online and are so, what's the word I'm looking at? They're so brave behind their computer screens and, their keyboard, and they type up how much you suck and how much more they know better than you. when they themselves have probably never even been in a band, sang for a band, written a song, played an instrument, gone on tour, or know what it's like to do so. So, you are listening to the,
I'm back.
The Michael Deacon program, and I am, the fill-in host, Mike Hitties. Oh, you're back. Oh, okay.
I'm back. Don't worry. So, Mike, you don't regret anything in your musical career, hindsight, now, and today. No regrets at all. You really, you had a very good career, Mike, and you don't regret any of it, correct?
I guess if I had to go back, there would be a few things I would do differently. You got to remember, when I got into music, I had absolutely no background whatsoever. I didn't know how to write a song. I didn't know how to play an instrument. I didn't know how to sing. I had never played in a show. Well, actually I did when I was a kid, but not like for real. And I just sort of did it. I did it blindly. And as time went by, I learned how to play guitar. I learned how to sing. I learned how to write music and compose. And, you know, it took about 5 years for me to really get, 5 or 6 years for me to really get my feet solid on the ground and know what the hell I was doing. But I was younger back then. I had a lot more energy, and my willpower and my confidence was just overflowing. So, by the time I got everything together and learned how to do it all, I was doing it better and better. Not to boast, but, you know, I was doing it better and better. And I didn't really, I wasn't a professional. I started out completely amateur, but I got to a level that most people don't get. So yeah, it's not like I regret everything, but if I had to go back, I'd change a few things.
Understood. Oh, of course.
How long have you been doing this show now, Michael?
Well, 2016, I believe, at the end of 2016.
Okay. That's right. Yeah, that sounds about right. And you were doing that before, for 5 years before?
Yeah, 2012, I believe.
That's right. And in fact, I remember doing the show for you. In fact, I think it was earlier than that, wasn't it? 2009, no?
No, it was 2012.
Okay, so that's when we did our first show together, our first interview together?
Right.
Yeah, and before, that sounds about right.
Yeah, and before that I was, you know, definitely wanting to be way more in the radio industry. I was really trying to get a job in the radio industry back in 2005, 2006. And, you know, I had a really bad experience with a local radio station down here. And
what happened?
Well, they were just kind of douchey to me. They just treated me so badly there. I'm not exactly sure what the hell happened.
Do you have a background in communications?
No, I don't.
Maybe that's why.
They just treated me so badly in there. And one of the DJs in there, he was on the air. And when I walked by and I was being shown around the whole studio there, I was basically given a little tour there. And this guy did not keep his eyes off of me the entire time I was walking around. I think he thought in his mind he was going to get fired.
Wow.
That's the only thing I could think of. But the guy that was doing the talking during my time in there, he looked worried. It was kind of funny. Yeah, I bet you he thought he was going to get scrapped. Because this was, now that I'm thinking about it, this was close to the holidays. And in the radio industry, you're most likely to get axed right when the weekend begins, or right when it is the weekend and on a holiday. That's when they really want to just give you the axe.
And did they?
They didn't fire that guy. He's still there.
Oh.
Yeah, no, he's still there. But I bet you anything, he thought, oh shit, I'm fucked. I swear, I bet you that went through his mind.
Yeah, I suppose. I thought you were going to say that they were going to axe you.
Oh no, no. I thought I was going to get the job.
Oh, well then they did axe you.
Well, not exactly. They, you know, they took me in, they showed me around, they considered me for a few minutes, and then the owner must have heard something he didn't like.
Oh, okay. I get it.
Yeah, right. That was the rest of the story. And then they looked like they came back to me and they had this look on their face like if I just killed someone. Yeah, but you know, back then, back in like 2012, well not 2012, back in, I think it was, might have been 2006, 2005 or 2006. I was a lot more crazier, Mike. I talk a lot about crazier shit.
You crazy?
Right. I know, right? Me crazy. So I figured they probably heard something they just did not like, and they were freaked out.
Well, that could happen at any time.
Yeah, that's whatever, though. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, you probably just were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Yeah.
It wasn't my time. It wasn't my time, Mike. That's what I think. I wasn't ready.
Well, either way, now you've got a great thing going, and
that's what I'm being told all the time. You have a great thing going. You have this. You have
just
that.
Just keep going with it.
Well, Mike, I'm about to fucking slit someone's throat here.
Why?
Because I'm running out of beer.
Well,
I've been drinking Double Barrel L since the program started at 8 p.m. and it's now 11.
Well, at least somebody's drunk.
Oh yeah, but I mean, I'm kind of surprised I've been able to handle my booze, even though I'm not a big drinker whatsoever. I think the show's been going pretty well. That's my personal assessment. I'm not quite sure if it's been good or not.
Well, last you told me you had people listening from all walks of life and all different sections of the world.
Yeah, they tune in. I really do respect the international listeners out there that tune in and support the program. And speaking of which, I have to thank one of the people that donate all the time here on the program. That's Frank out there. Yeah, I thank that guy and Will too. These are people who donate to the program.
That's wonderful. That's actually really great.
Yeah, that's Justin out there, rather, not Frank. Justin, thank you, by the way, for always donating. You're helping this program stay alive. Really do appreciate that.
Way to go, Michael. That's great news. I'm really happy to hear that for you.
Yeah, for sure. So, Mike, since we've been talking a lot about music lately, are there no bands that you like at all?
No, not true at all.
Like a modern band we have that's still alive and kicking here.
Like, you mean like a new band or an old band?
New band.
I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, Michael.
Go ahead.
I'm going to be honest. I don't have my feet as wet as I used to. My feet aren't as wet as they used to be when I was in the music scene.
Right.
Out and about. You know, I used to be a DJ. At one point I used to DJ 5 nights a week in 5 different clubs.
Jesus Christ, Mike.
Yeah.
My God, how did you pull that off?
I didn't. It only lasted for about a month and I was absolutely drained. I couldn't do it anymore.
You must have been dead, man.
I was rehearsing 3 days a week and then I had a show. So 5 nights a week from like Monday to Friday, I was DJing. And
you're crazy. You're fucking crazy.
I can't even believe
you did that.
Loud, pounding music 5 days a week, just beating my brains in.
Wow.
And then of course, you know, you're out and you got people drinks and drugs and I couldn't do it after a while. I was just so exhausted. I was aging like 5 years a week.
Oh yeah, man.
And eventually I just stopped it after like a month. I was like, I gotta knock off like 3 of these gigs. I can't keep doing it.
I wasn't ever a DJ at any nightclub, but I was a bouncer for probably about 2 years. And I know what that's like, Mike, those hours.
Yeah. And did you used to drink while you were on a job or no?
Well, you know, every now and then, sure.
But not slosh.
Nah, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, sometimes I would drink. Like, I stopped drinking in 2008.
I had to be like Dalton.
Say what?
Roadhouse.
I don't know who that is, but I'll take your word that it's funny. So, okay. The thing with what I was going to say is, with me, when I would DJ, you know, I could be DJing, and once the people started gathering into the room, like, you know, the regulars would show up and one guy would walk over to me and he'd throw me a bag of weed or a joint and be like, hey man, play me that song that I love so much. A couple of minutes later, another guy would come over and throw me a bag of coke or something, like, you know, say, hey man, you know, down here to see you again, you know, play me that song that I like. Okay. Another couple of minutes, a guy would come down and like maybe toss me a bag of dope and be like, hey man, play me that song I like. And then another person buys me a drink and it just went on all the time. Like I would come home with all types of drugs, drink tickets that were people were buying me drinks and it was toxic. I couldn't take it after a while, you know? And,
I remember the bathroom scene.
I stopped drinking and drugging back in 2008.
Hey, good for you.
Yeah, I couldn't. I'm an old man, man.
You can't do that for too long.
No. Well, I did it really for 20 years.
Yeah, man. You really can't do that for too long.
20 years was my cutoff date.
But that's what I noticed. You know, you work those kind of hours and you work them pretty hard. It definitely does age you.
It does.
That's what especially I noticed, man.
Especially alcohol. Anything that keeps you up, especially like Coke or any kind of speed or something. When you start losing sleep, you start to age quickly. And especially if you start drinking, you start bloating out and everything, like puffy eyes and messed up cheekbones, just poor complexion, bad teeth.
Someone got stabbed over there, by the way.
Where?
I think that's exactly why I got shut down.
Where?
The club I used to work.
Oh, where you were working.
Yeah, yeah. I believe someone got stabbed.
San Diego?
No, here in El Centro.
Yeah, I there were several clubs I had hung out in, stabbing. I saw a guy get stabbed right in front of me.
Oh, did you? I never seen anyone get stabbed, but I have seen someone get shot before.
No, that's even worse. I was in,
Trust me, it is.
Yeah. I used to have a Wednesday night in a club in New Jersey, called Infestation Wednesdays.
What a name.
I used to book bands, you know, local and traveling bands, and I used to DJ. So, you know, I was doing promotion and booking and DJing on a Wednesday night. It wasn't easy, especially in Jersey, let me tell you. One night later, towards the end of the night, probably close to like 2:30 in the morning, or maybe it was 2 o'clock, we were just getting ready to close, and there had been a scuffle or an argument earlier. And after it was broken up, one of the guys left and then came back like an hour later, walked through the door, ran right up to the guy who he had the argument with and just stabbed him and then ran back out the door. Like it happened so quick.
That's so scary, right?
Yeah. And like, you know, when it happens, like you're in shock and you don't realize what's happening. And your adrenaline's pumping and you're up, and then all of a sudden you realize you've been stabbed, you're bleeding profusely, and then you hit the floor and then you start bleeding out. Luckily, the ambulance showed up in time and they took the guy out. And then after that, we were stuck in the club until 5 o'clock in the morning because the cops showed up and they had to like, you know, talk to everybody, you know, where were you? What did you do? Did you know the victim? So on and so forth. So yeah, that was pretty strange. I never had that happen before. The only thing good that happened from that night was another night I was driving home on my motorcycle at the time, and I got pulled over by a cop at like, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the morning. And the cop walks up to me and goes, I said to him, I remember you. I said, you were there when they stabbed the guy at that club that I worked at. And he let me go.
That's funny.
Yeah.
You know, I never really had any good stories except, to be honest with you, I didn't really have any good stories when I was bouncing at all. I was mostly occupied with, girlfriends crying and their boyfriends next to me just shaking their heads.
Oh Lord.
I don't understand why I had that so many times happen. I would have someone's girlfriend come up to me crying, saying their boyfriend's doing this or doing that. And it's like, how is that my responsibility?
It's almost like you were the bartender.
It really, I was stunned. I just kept thinking, why are you even telling me this for?
Well, you know how that goes. If nobody else is around, like I said, if you're...
I just thought, do I have a sign on my head that says, come and talk to me?
No, it's like you were the bartender. And that's what the bartender's job is, especially in a club, in a bar that's not loud music. You know, people just tend to...
That was really the only drama I ever had.
That's it? Come on, that's it?
No, I'm being honest. That was the only thing. Girls crying, and that, I'm being completely honest. There was a couple fights here and there, but that's kind of standard. And then after I didn't work for, I took a break for a couple weeks, and then someone gets stabbed, and then that's it. Place shuts Yikes. Down.
Yikes.
Thank God I wasn't there for that.
When I used to DJ at the Limelight in New York City, for a short period of time.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, about 6 months.
That's pretty cool.
And every once in a while, as I would show up to DJ that night, you know, I used to have to take a train in, or I would take my bike in or something like that. And, you know, I'd walk to the club, however many blocks I had to walk to get to the club. And sometimes I'd walk up there and there'd be like police tape across the doors. And, I would walk up and I'd see a policeman there and I'd be like, oh, so what'd they get closed down for tonight? You know, it's either a drug bust or somebody got murdered or yeah. stabbed. I can't tell you how many times that would happen. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll go home now because there's no reason for me to be here. But yeah, one night there was a stabbing at the Limelight as well. I was upstairs DJing and eventually somebody came upstairs. They're like, turn off the music and get out. I'm like, what? Just do what I tell you. And I had to pack my shit up. Everybody had to get kicked out and I found out that somebody got stabbed downstairs.
Wow.
Yeah. New York is a fun place, man.
New York is crazy.
Ugh, that's why I had to leave.
I only know of a few spots because I've been told what goes down. You know, certain neighborhoods I'm told about. Things, you know, things of that nature. But, man, New York, it just seems like such a crazy, crazy city to live in.
It is.
Like at all hours, it just seems it's crazy to be there.
It never sleeps. And, you know, when I was younger, like in my mid twenties up until about my 40s, really, I used to go to New York all the time. I would take the train in and I'll tell you, it did sort of change after 9/11. I think a whole new attitude, was invoked and, things, in my personal opinion, I think things got much worse, much, much worse. You know, there's gangs that are like roaming wild and they don't get arrested and it's just bad news. And I had to get away. I just couldn't take it anymore.
But by the way, Mike, were you ever into the cocaine?
I was for a short period
of
time.
Okay.
I was.
You had that little episode in your life for a little bit there.
Yeah, I've had a few issues.
I hear you.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. In fact,
all right.
I even wrote about it in my book, King of an Empire to the Shoes of a Misfit, which is also available on my website, MikeHideous.com.
Yeah, that's right. It's in your book.
Yep. I wrote about it in a new chapter. I did have a small issue with cocaine in the late 90s into the early part of the new millennium. And it all started when I was on tour with the Misfits.
Shit. It started there. Not during the DJ era.
No.
Wow.
I wasn't DJing until after I was in the Misfits. I was in Amsterdam the first time I did coke. And, from that point on after the Misfits, I wanted to do it again. And I started doing it in, the later part of 98. And before I knew it, 99, 2000 and up until about 2002.
Wait a minute. Rewind here. Going back to the Misfits here, you got coke in South America?
No. Amsterdam.
Oh, in Amsterdam.
Yeah. That was the first time I ever had it.
When you did that tour there in mm-hmm. Europe there. Okay.
Yep. And then after I came back and I was out of the band, I found a, you know, everybody finds a contact. And
that's like the most watered down drug.
I hate it. I absolutely hate it.
I don't fucking like that shit.
I don't like it either. I don't even know why I ever did it. It's addicting. It's expensive. And it gets you hooked. Like you get hooked on it. Like you just keep, for me, I used to just keep doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it.
Oh,
I just,
man.
I had to do the whole thing until it was gone. I had no control.
Yeah. I had a friend who was just like that, Mike. He was just completely in it. So
I can't
hear you.
I can't be bothered. You know, I was just talking to a guy, the other day who was telling me, he was in prison. He went to prison for coke. He was telling me how when he lived in Florida, they used to steal cars. And I asked him, I said, well,
because
I asked him, like, what'd you get busted for? He's like, I got busted for drugs. I said, well, how did it happen? He said, well, I used to steal cars. I said, how many cars did you used to steal a night? 26. He said, that was the most we ever got. I'm like, you stole 26 cars in one night?
Wow.
He's like, yeah, me and his friend. And I'm like, why? He goes, well, we were on coke and we started getting greedy and we began to steal more cars to buy more coke. It was just a vicious cycle. You know, that old saying, you know, I work hard to buy more Coke so I can work faster.
Yeah.
So I can, you know, work hard so I can buy more Coke so I can work faster. So I can buy, you know, it just goes on and on.
There's a lot of people like that, man, with that mindset.
And then I moved from that to like Freebase, which is, you know, just smoking it. And that was just like, oh my God, just fucking horrible.
Jesus Christ, Mike.
Oh, I've been down the road of every drug.
I didn't know you did that.
I've done every drug.
How did that get introduced to you though, if you don't mind me asking?
What, the Freebase?
Yeah, you're just a friend of yours or?
I'll tell you, the guy who actually hooked me up with it for the first time is dead now as an overdose.
Oh shit.
We used to work, his name was Paul, and we used to work together at a newspaper, a music newspaper, an arts and entertainment weekly newspaper in New Jersey. And a lot of times we would stay there late in the office and work late hours. You know, some people would come in at like 8 o'clock and leave at 4. We'd come at like 12 o'clock and stay till, I would come in at like 11 o'clock and stay till like 10 o'clock at night sometimes. So one night I was there and, you know, everybody was there. Everybody who worked there was like a rocker of some sort. They were in a band or they did drugs, whatever. And, one time this guy pulled out this pipe. He's like, here, try this. And I'm like, okay. So I tried it and it gave me such an amazing rush compared to the fucking Coke that I was doing up my nose, which right. by the way was destroying my nasal passages, you know? So.
Yeah, you're going to end up like Artie Lang.
Yeah, no.
His nose is just so screwed up from all the Coke.
I remember you told me last time we spoke.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, oh wow, I can finally smoke it and not have to worry about sniffing it up my nose. And, I'll tell you, I'm very proud of myself. When I realized that I was getting too deep involved in spending money on drugs, I made the conscious decision to get off of it. And what I did is I weaned myself off of it because it's just as addicting. You know, it's still the same element that you're smoking or snorting, whatever it is. And it's still highly addictive. So once I realized that I had to stop, I planned like a month and like each week I would do less increments of it. And eventually I got down to the point where I was no longer doing any of it and I was off of it completely 100%. I did it all by myself. I didn't need no rehab or detox or nothing.
Was cocaine really the drug that really got you there, Mike, that you preferred, that you were hooked on?
No. I even tried heroin. I was even on heroin for a while.
Would you say that was kind of the end game for you there?
Yeah, heroin is a, cocaine.
I had a friend who tried opium. He was completely into that for a while. That was scary.
Opium is nothing compared to heroin. Particularly if you're mainlining it right into your, if you're IVing it right into your arm. That is the quickest way and the most addictive way.
Just like I said,
I've had a lot of drugs. I've gotten myself off of Coke. I got myself off of Freebase, but the one, and I've even had like issues with like Valium and Xanax and stuff in the past.
Right.
The worst drug to get off of is heroin.
Yeah, the heroin.
Once you get hooked, you are hooked. And that's it. And the only way you can come down is if you're willing to go through days of withdrawal, vomiting, sweating, hot flashes, cold flashes, and sleepless nights, pain, and the possibility of death. I tried for 3 months straight, and this is a true story. I tried for 3 months straight I took every weekend off and I would try to go cold turkey. Cause I wanted to be off of it. I didn't want to be on it. I knew I was screwing up.
Yeah.
And, eventually I realized I had to get off it, but I couldn't get off of it.
That's heavy, Mike.
I couldn't. I was on it for a couple of years.
I understand, by the way. Like I mention my uncles all the time here on the program. I have a bunch, by the way, for those who are curious. And one of my many uncles I do have, he was a heroin addict. And I remember him being really young. I haven't been around him, for many years now, but when I was just a little boy, I do recall when he would nod off and shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So man, I totally understand and feel for you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
That's some heavy shit, you know?
It took me, I had to go to a doctor. I had gone to all the detox centers or the methadone clinics. I just wasn't ready. Ultimately you have to be ready to get off of it, to quit. Because if you're not, you'll just keep doing it.
That's true.
And so what I had to do is I had to go to a doctor. I went to a personal doctor. Like the main reason I started doing it is because I was under, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I've had some serious health problems in my lifetime.
Yeah, you talked about that.
I've had cancer a number of times. And as a result from chemotherapy, radiation, x-rays, and all the surgeries I've had, I had a lot of pain. And at the time, in the early part of the millennium, I was on like Vicodin. I had been on painkillers since I was 16 because that's when my cancer started.
Right.
So I knew what it was like to be on painkillers, but eventually the painkillers weren't working. And by 2000, I began to seek my own form of medication or medicating myself. And, somebody had offered me dope. And they're like, you know, here, try it. You know, it's the same as Vicodin. It's the same as Percocet, really. It's just a little different. It's in a powder form. You mix it up and you shoot it into your veins. It sounds horrible, and it, in a sense it is, but it's no different than like injecting morphine or taking Percocet or taking, any kind of painkiller, like a narcotic.
Right.
It's the same exact element. It's the same thing. It's from the opium plant. It's just heroin has a really bad name. The funny thing is it used to be sold in the early 1900s by Bayer.
Over the counter.
Over the counter as a cough suppressant.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I tried getting off of it so many times because I didn't want to be on it, and I just couldn't get off it. So I go to the doctor, and the doctor, you know, they get me a prescription for methadone because at the same time, even though I had to get off of the dope that I was using, I still had to be medicated through a doctor for the pain that I had as a cancer patient. That's how I got into it, because I was medicating myself because the pain meds I was taking weren't working anymore.
Yeah. So you had to go the other route.
Yeah. For lack of a better term, yes.
Yeah,
yes, I did. It was probably one of the biggest mistakes I ever made.
So that was your regret there.
That was definitely a regret, was getting involved in dope.
Well,
I'm not proud of it. I'm not proud of it, but at the same time, I'm not going to have anybody tell me, oh, you know, you're just a fucking junkie. You know what? Fuck you. If you're going to sit there and criticize me and you don't know anything about me or why I've done what I've done, then you really should shut your mouth, because I had my reasons, and my reasons were valid.
Right.
I knew what I was doing was wrong. I knew what I was doing was costly. Bad for my health, but, so is smoking, so is drinking, so is eating high cholesterol.
So is being alive.
Yeah.
Life causes cancer, man.
It sure does.
It really does.
So, you know, like I said, there were people that when they found out that I was doing heroin who wrote to me and told me how much they hated me and despised me and disrespected me. Well, sorry.
Yeah, at least you didn't overdose, Mike.
No, I came close to it a couple of times.
Shit.
Yeah, I came close to it.
All my favorite musicians are heroin users.
That's,
I mean, I hate to sound that way, but.
It's true.
It's kind of true though, you know, a lot of the greatest musicians out there experimented a time or two with heroin.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like I'm in good company.
You kind of are, man.
I've tried to walk that path as others before me have, but it wasn't worth it, really. I mean, I wish I never stuck that needle in my arm.
Yeah, it's not good news. And by the way, back to Spy Society 99. Where Have You Been has been a song that's kind of like a theme song here. All kinds of folks love that song, and then they find out it's you, and they're like, really, that's Mike? They're completely taken back by you, Mike.
Nah, well, I I really loved doing Spy Society. It was so different for me. It was such a different type of music to perform and sing. You know, it was still rock music, but it had a different edge to it. You know, the whole punk rock.
But the skull in there.
Influence.
Yeah. What's that? With the skull influence in there. Yeah,
absolutely.
And nice.
No. You think there was ska influence?
A little bit, just a tiny
no,
bit.
No.
Tiny bit.
I disagree with you. No. We were influenced by like big band, jazz, lounge, and punk rock. There was no ska.
There was, well, I mean, not with the horns or anything of that nature.
No. And even influence-wise, there was just nothing involved with ska. Don't get me wrong, there is some ska that I like, but that was not an influence. We were listening to like stuff like...
It was a bit rockabilly, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, but we were listening to like the crooners like Dean Martin, Tony Bennett, some of the jazz performers like Louis Armstrong and... what the hell's his name? Jack Benny and... Or Jack Benny's a comedian. Who the hell am I thinking of?
Well, I'm thinking of the song Horror Biz that you did. That's why. That's kind, you know, that kind of had a little bit of a ska sound to it. Little though.
Maybe. That song was obviously we did that song because we every time Spy Society would play, somebody in the audience would yell, "Do a Misfits song." So we decided to learn a Misfits cover. And
good choice though.
Yeah, it was always one of my favorite songs, that's why. And so yeah, we do like a little medley in the beginning of the song, and I would kind of do lyrics from different songs, and then we'd go right into the Horror Business lyrics, and you know, it was fun. I love that band. That was a great band.
Great times indeed. And, Mike, before we close up shop here, I did want to talk to you a little bit about other things here. Is there anything else that you're working on? Will you ever put out another book? Will you ever put out anything else in terms of art?
Well, yes. I'm always trying to keep busy. What I'm doing right now is I am going through a lot of my collection of Empire Hideous photographs and music. I plan on releasing a couple of new songs, a couple of remastered, remixed songs. My friend Jake from Hades Machine is actually remixing Heaven Raining Bullets and 2 Minutes to Midnight from the Say Your Prayers album. He's actually doing a remix that we're going to re-release when he's done with them. And what else? So yeah, I'm finding like old live recordings from shows that Spy Society did or Empire Hideous did. And I'm going to release stuff like that. But I'm also doing my artwork. I'm painting again. I'm starting to paint. I've been writing some new music. So I'm trying to get back involved in things. There's been a rumor about an acoustic gig that's going to be played on Halloween. On Halloween this year, Empire Hideous will have reached 30 years in existence.
Crazy, right?
30 fucking years. So as a result, the weekend of Halloween, we have been talking about doing an acoustic set at a private party in New Jersey. And if all goes well with that, who knows what may come after that.
Very cool. Very cool.
Other than that, all I can say is if anybody else is interested, you know, just go to either the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/hideous, I believe, Hideous Mike or Hideous underscore Mike, one or the other. But it's not Mike Hideous. It's Hideous Mike. That's the Facebook page. And then, of course, there's the website, which is MikeHideous.com. And Mike is spelled with a Y.
Very cool. Well, Mike, I do want to thank you very much for being a part of the program yet again. Always, always fun and always a pleasure to talk to you, Mike.
Michael, I want to thank you. It's always a great honor to sit here and shoot the shit with you. I always enjoy it. I've always enjoyed it since the first few times we ever did it together. And thank you for having me on, and doing a great job, man. Keep up the good work, all right?
Yeah, thank you, buddy. And we'll talk again on the flip side, my friend. I'll hit you up tomorrow.
Okay, great. Sounds good, Michael. Talk to you soon. Take care.
All right, Mike. Good night. Have fun out there.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye. And that was Mike Hideous, a great guest, a great friend of the program here. If you are listening to this on a replay, keep in mind, you can listen every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, live on the TuneIn Radio app. Search End of Days and you'll find this program. Never forget, this program depends on you out there listening. Don't always sit there behind your phones and computers. You can always call into this program. And if you like this program, by the way, you can always donate. Go to michaeldeacon.com and hit that donate button. Truly appreciate that. My name is Michael. Thanks for listening. And with that said, the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time, good night, everybody. Oh my.
Speaking of the Illuminati, we're not going to be behind me, but the Illuminati certainly is part of the whole thing. The top members of the Illuminati are open bushes.
I could tell that all the mainstream media outlets were giving me, like, bullshit. Like, you can just see it. It's clear.
How appropriate. I wish I could be in that ring with Hogan right now.
It's crazy.
I had no idea this shit existed before 776.
Paul and Grammy. I'm not a Grammy. I'm a TV real.
A lot of good content. A lot of cool topic. You know, I feel, you know, fortunate to have an opportunity to speak to you guys tonight.
That's what I want.
Just Yosef Smith, you made a phenomenal there. Whatever. But you have one of the most incredibly well-rounded shows.
The greatest tag team on the radio.
Guess what, motherfuckers?
Successfully erased. Flawless victory.
Greetings, greetings. I must admit, I'm, Andy and, Michael, I'm a bit, well, Frankie too, you know. I have got to say something to the Cubans. But I'm a bit depressed, YouTube Sherry has gone postal, and I believe it was from the Monroe Institute, focus level 10. I kid.